This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of In the Afterlife by Alexandra Bracken, performed by Amy McFadden. After leaving Nico to his work, I headed to the upper level, barely keeping a lid on the fury ripping through me. It didn't matter, not even for a second, that Senator Cruz was in Alban's old office with Cole and they were having a serious, quiet discussion. I let myself explode into the room. Senator Cruz leapt to her feet and pressed a hand to her chest. Cole only leaned back in his seat.
"He told you," Cole said, his voice flat.
"Yes, he told me," I snapped. "How could you authorize—"
"Shut the door. Ruby."
Cole slammed a hand down on the desk, cutting off my tirade before it could even really begin. The way his voice immediately softened, the pained quality of it, brought me up short.
"Shut the door."
I kicked it shut behind me, crossing my arms over my chest. "It is a death sentence to send that kid into Thurmond," I told him. "He won't be able to handle it, and even if he could, who's to say they'll take him to the camp and not back to Lita's testing program?"
"The one he was in was closed shortly after I got the flash drive out," Cole said.
"Like there aren't others?" I said.
"You were fine with sending Tommy and Pat into Oasis," Senator Cruz reminded me.
She knew about this too? "I'm not fine with it. I don't like it. But they're functioning as eyes and ears only, and we'll have them out within 2 days. Nico won't be able to get away to install the program, and even if by some miracle he does, he won't be able to get away from the control tower once it's complete."
"Then what do you suggest?" Cole asked. "Really, I'm all ears."
I thought of Zoo's reaction to Vida and Chubbs leaving, the pale shock that had wrapped its icy hands over her. If Nico was right, and this was the only way, then it... I took a deep breath in, my fingers curling into fists. Wouldn't it have to be me? Nico was too fragile right now. Being back there would destroy him. But I could, if it helped the people I loved, if it helped every kid that came after us. I could accept that it was the role I was meant to play in this.
"They'll kill you," I thought.
Clancy had already confirmed what they had done to the other oranges. You would have to convince them again, make them think you're green. I shook my head, trying to clear the thoughts. Last resort. This was a last resort plan. "I think we need to consider Liam's ideas," I said. "Maybe we should go more indirect. Use the media. Get the parents involved. If we take Gray's image down, shake up that last bit of trust people have in him, we can dismantle his government that way. The international community can't ignore evidence of abuse and wrongdoing for long. They'll step in."
"Sweetheart, they've been ignoring evidence for years," Senator Cruz said. "They tried to drop aid into the country, and it backfired. Gray threatened to shoot their planes out of the sky if they crossed into our airspace again. I've tried and tried."
"We just have to get them the right proof," I said. "We can use Lillian Gray's words about the cure and whatever she knows about what caused IAAN to prove it's safe for them to travel in and help overthrow Gray. Haven't there been peacekeeping forces formed in the past?"
"We have a deal, Oasis, for supplies," Senator Cruz said sharply, turning to look at Cole.
"Are you reneging?"
"No, I promise you that's not what we're doing," he said, both hands out and placating. "It's natural to have cold feet before an op like this. Can I speak to Ruby alone for a few minutes?"
Senator Cruz rose stiffly, casting an unhappy glance in my direction as she exited the room and pulled the door firmly shut behind her.
"Talk to me, Jem," Cole said. "Tell me what's going on in that head of yours."
"We should keep the plan for Oasis, but I think we need to rethink our approach to Thurmond. Nico won't be able to handle the strain, and we have no guarantee he'd even be brought in. We don't have to be the League, default on a straightforward assault. Cole let out a humorless laugh, rocking back in his chair again.
Do you know why that became the general strategy? It wasn't always that way. Alban tried for years to release the truth about Gray and the quality of life in the camps. He tried propaganda, straight-up emotional manipulation. And what messages did get through fell flat. It wasn't that people didn't care. It was that their heads were already in Gray's game, and he told them, time and time and time again, that if they took their kids out of his camps, they would die. For what Liam's suggesting to work, it's not just about getting the parents there. It's making them willing to come. And if you don't think the PSFs wouldn't open fire on civilians, you are dead wrong, Ruby. Dead wrong.
There hasn't been a situation like this before, though, I said. You can't know for sure. The metal banged and screeched as Cole reached into the bottom drawer of the desk and slammed it shut again. He stood up and began slapping down sheets of paper across the empty desk, one at a time, lining them up in neat rows, a gruesome echo of the picture's contents. They were... All of those pictures were of kids in those thin, color-coded camp uniforms, black Psi ID numbers across their backs. Some of their eyes were open, but more often than not, they weren't. Some were bloodied, their faces swollen. A few looked like they were just sleeping. The only thing they had in common was the long, empty ditch at their feet.
"Where did you get these?"
I whispered.
"Amplify released them a few days ago," Cole said. "I don't think I need to tell you that these aren't doctored, no matter how hard Gray's cronies try to spin it on the news shows."
I shook my head, feeling like I was about to crawl out of my own skin. I would have backed away if there was room to move. As it was, the walls were folding in over my head, falling down over me, crushing, crushing, crushing. I had to get out of this room. My palms were drenched in sweat, too slick to open the door. Cole grabbed my arm and forced me to stand in front of the desk, forced me to look down at the photos and see them, absorb the blood, the bone, the vacant eyes.
"These are the people we're dealing with," he said. "This is reality. These are people who won't hesitate to kill anyone who interferes with their orders. This is what hesitation has cost us. This is why we have to fight. Revolutions are won with blood, not words. These photos have been out for days. And what have they done to get people involved, angry enough to stand up and protest? Nothing. Ruby, even this isn't enough. They all think they're fake."
"Let me go." I struggled out of his grip, the floor rising and rolling under me. That face. I knew that face. The girl in green.
"No one is going to fight for us, Ruby. We have to fight. We have to end this. Match force with force. Every second we waste circling back and debating the same shit is a second we could be saving these kids from something like this. What do you think sparked this? They were beaten to death. Was it because they tried to escape? They were caught in the middle of a fight? Did some PSF snap? Does it matter?"
Oh my God, I was going to be sick. I pressed my fists against my eyes, trying to remember how it was I usually went about breathing. "These pictures are from Thurmond. This is Thurmond. That girl in green..."
Cole's grip on me tightened. I had the vague sense that he was the only reason I was still standing on my feet.
"I know her. Her name was Ashley. She was one of the older girls in my..."
"In your cabin?" Cole finished. "Are you sure? Maybe you should take another look."
I did, and it changed nothing. I lived with those girls for years. I knew their faces better than I knew my own. Ashley had been at Thurmond for over a year before I showed up, and she took care of us like you'd think a big sister would. She was nice. She was dead.
Okay,
Cole said quietly.
I'm sorry. I believe you. I'm so sorry. I wouldn't have showed them to you at all if I'd known. The source that sold them to Amplify didn't identify which camp they're from.
Jesus, that ditch. The realization thundered down around me. They were putting them in that ditch? That was what they got? After everything? This? Too late. This was Thurmond. This was real. We weren't going fast enough. I hadn't been able to get to them in time. A swell of bile rose up in me, and I ripped myself out of Cole's grip, collapsing onto my knees. I barely got my face into the trash can before I could throw up everything in my stomach. When I came back to the moment, Cole was holding my hair back with one hand, rubbing a circle across my shoulder blades with the other. I braced my arms against the plastic container and gave in to the sting of tears. Did the source say what happened? I used the tissue he handed me to wipe my mouth. I felt lightheaded, like I was slipping out of the moment, and fought against the pull.
They issued a statement saying one of the PSFs stationed there snuck a cell phone into the camp and snapped the photos.
Ruby,
I think, I don't want to believe this, but it seems like too much of a coincidence that this happened and they're closing the camp. There are over 3,000 kids there, and the other camps are small and crowded. Is it possible they're trying to reduce the population of kids before the move?
They've killed kids before, I said. The ones who tried to escape. The oranges. Reds who wouldn't let themselves be controlled. If this has happened once, it'll happen again. They're going to keep doing this. We're sitting around waiting to get one useful piece of information, and they're dying. This can't just be about evidence. Not for Thurmond. We need to get those kids out now. I saw the future with sharp clarity, and it wasn't a road. It wasn't a sky. It wasn't anything that beautiful. It was electricity singing through metal chain link and bars. It was mud and rain and 1,000 days bleeding into a stream of black. Cole must have sensed it, seen it reflected in my face, because he leaned back and finally let me go. We're going to need actual fighters for the Thurmond hit, I said. Trained soldiers to go in first.
Agreed, Cole said, looking away. Harry offered to help us fight. I wasn't going to say yes. I hate the idea of owing him anything. But we don't have any time to waste now. Nico is right. The only way to shut down the camp's defenses is by attacking them from within. I'll see if I can try to bribe one of the PSFs. Someone has to know someone there.
No, I said, my voice calm. It has to be me. I have to be the one who goes back. A PSF can flip, take a bribe, tip the camp controllers off to what we're doing. If it has to be done, I'm going to do it myself.
The others will never agree to it,
Cole said quietly, but he didn't disagree. He didn't want to stop me. I know, I said. That's why we aren't going to tell them until we have to. Over the next week, the face of the ranch seemed to change. Kylie and the other driver who had gone out looking for tribes returned victorious, even as Liam set out to find Olivia twice and came back empty-handed both times. If he was frustrated by the wasted time and gas, he didn't show it. A part of me wondered if he used the time to get away from all of this for a few hours, taking lovely Rita in the direction of the rising sun and returning in time for the sun to set. The new recruits were willing enough. The group of 5 blues that had come back, Isabel, Maria, Adam, Colin, and Gav, had all served on East River's watch and, in theory, knew how to use weapons. The issue was, after months spent in the wilds of Utah looking like they'd survived a meteor apocalypse, they only took orders from Gav, who didn't particularly enjoy taking orders from anyone, least of all an adult shithead like Cole. He complained about the cramped sleeping conditions, the plain basic food we ate, the smell of the shampoo, like he was some kind of connoisseur of floral notes and fragrance. Gav was stocky, had a ruddy complexion, and seemed mean enough to want to fight, but only if we begged him. The saga of Gav the asshole ended when Cole hauled him up by the arm from dinner, dragged him into the shooting range, and locked the door behind them. 5 minutes and a muffled gunshot later, Gav came out a team player, and Cole looking far less like he wanted to set the kid's hair on fire. The other tribe was a group of Greens who spent days circling the various computers that the resident Greens now seemed chained to day and night, if only to keep the new hands from tampering with their settings. Only one of the girls, Mila, offered to join the tactical team, but I had to work with her each morning to get her to understand what each hand signal meant, so she'd be able to follow my commands. The third group that arrived, 2 days after Mila's, found us, and we knew them. Nico had spotted the three teens looking around Smiley's, clearly drawn to the crescent moon that we'd painted on the now-defunct bar's door. Kylie and Liam had all but run for the tunnel door to greet them. It wasn't until I saw their interaction on the computer screen, the way Liam pounded the back of one of the guys with shaggy dark hair and tanned skin, that I recognized him.
"Friends of yours?"
Cole asked, coming out of the office as the five of them came up through the tunnel laughing, practically talking over each other to get answers.
"You remember Mike?"
Liam said, gesturing to the kid in the Cubs baseball hat. He was thinner than I remembered, a good 10 pounds lighter from stress and the strain of the road, likely. But I knew him by the wary look he cast in my direction. The kid gave me a stiff nod, then turned to accept a bear hug from Lucy. Cole let out a faint whistle at that.
"Not a fan of yours, I take it."
"The feeling is mutual," I assured him. Mike hadn't liked me or trusted me, and had never really wanted to take the blindfold off his eyes about Clancy.
"That's Ollie and Gonzo over there. They're brothers,"
Liam continued, pointing to the two teens standing off to the side. One, Gonzo, I think, had his hand on a makeshift knife made out of a glass shard, a stick, and fabric.
"They were on watch with me. You guys hungry? I think dinner should just about be ready."
I caught his arm before he led the group away. "You can't tell them about Clancy."
"I already did,"
he told me in a thin voice,
"and they don't care as long as he stays locked up."
"If they try to find him, they won't," Liam said, pulling his arm away.
"They're not here for him."
I wanted to ask him what exactly he meant by that, but he was already gone, jogging to catch up to the others. Zoo, who'd been idling nearby in the hall, had come to stand beside me, looking up at me in question. "I'll tell you later," I promised her, because we didn't have time. I didn't have time to think about Liam, let alone constantly seek him out in the garage where he kept to himself. The morning after the Greens perfected the cameras embedded in the glasses, 2.5 weeks before March 1st, Kylie drove Tommy and Pat out of California. They wound their way down surface streets and access roads until they reached Elko, Nevada, the closest town to Oasis that was more than a few houses baking in the desert sun. The boys spent the next few days hanging out at the fringes of town, appearing, disappearing, causing just enough suspicion for some money-hungry soul to call them in for a reward. There was a close call, during which it seemed like the PSFs who collected them were going to take them out of state, up to the camp in Wyoming, but they changed course at the last moment. Their glasses captured everything. We had a front row seat as the kids were driven up through the desert, as they were processed into Oasis, as they walked through the hallways with their many doors, as they were brought into their rooms, as the PSFs roughed them up a little to show off, slapping Tommy hard enough to knock the glasses off his face. We charted meal times, lights out, rotations, and compared the personnel lists on the PSF network to the faces we saw. After one day, we'd already seen the entirety of the premises. The camp was a two-story building, shrouded from outside eyes by a tall electric fence and canopied tarps, both to keep out the sun and to block any views of the yard from above. We knew that the weekly supplies came at 4:30 every Friday morning. The loud engines and tires chewing gravel and dirt announced their arrival.
"The batteries and the cameras will run out soon," Nico warned. "Is everything saved and downloaded somewhere?"
Liam asked, standing behind him, next to a clearly impressed Senator Cruz. Nico turned around in his chair.
"Yeah, but why?"
Liam glanced toward the floor.
"In case we need to refer back to it when we figure out planning and timing."
"There's nothing left to do then," Cole said, "but practice. And wait."
4 days of waiting. 4 days of basic self-defense training. 4 days of reminding the kids to keep the safety catch on their guns until they were ready to fire, to brace themselves when they needed to, and to use their abilities before they'd think about firing. And now, day 3 of the run-through. The first day had been simple enough. Most of the kids in this group, the East River kids at least, had experienced overpowering a large truck in a highway setting. They'd had to do it any number of times to steal supplies and food. The trick was reminding them repeatedly that they couldn't destroy the truck in the process. I adjusted the strap on my tactical helmet, tightening until I felt it dig into the soft skin beneath my jaw as I crouched down, breathing in the clean, cool February air. It was my first time outside in what felt like a month, and we'd only been allowed to position ourselves outside of the garage's loading dock door. It had taken us nearly half a day to clear out space in the garage, temporarily moving the cars, Liam's bike, and the bigger pieces of furniture and crates outside. I saw him lean back, as if checking to make sure they were all still on the other side of the building where we'd left them. I'd had a hard time putting a finger on his mood today. It seemed to shift by the minute. The kids behind me were a cluster of disordered black fatigues. Each piece had been found, collected, and pulled by Liam and others running the supplies, specifically because they were close to the fatigues worn by the PSFs. The look was pulled together with the assault rifles in their hands. Everyone had spent hours of the last 3 days in the makeshift shooting range we'd set up. The rapid firing of the bullets had steeled my nerves more than I'd expected. Lacing up black combat boots, adjusting holsters and utility belts, had made me feel like I was stepping back into a shell I'd abandoned when I'd split with the League. It was a good fit. Steadying, at least. I felt my feet fixed firmly to the ground with the added weight of the necessities of combat. Liam put a hand on my shoulder to steady himself as he adjusted the strap on his rifle, and for the 10th time today, I felt my chest tighten, my hands clench around my own gun. To think I'd believed being in the Children's League would destroy him, ruin every good part of him. The only person dragging him into this firefight was me.
"Begin!"
We came at the door in a rush of over-eager energy, pouring through the opening. I felt the lick of adrenaline against my heart, counting off the timing in my head. The two blues in front of me, Josh and Sarah, raised their rifle sights to their eyes and stepped into the makeshift hallway we'd constructed out of pallets, simulating the layout of the lower-level hall we'd seen. They swept their hands out toward Zoo and Hina, who were pretending to be the PSFs posted at either end of the hall standing guard, and the girls made a dramatic show of pretending they were thrown back. Liam actually laughed behind me, which set my teeth on edge.
"Stop!" Cole called from his perch atop one of the ladders. "Girls, you have to take this seriously, otherwise I'm subbing you out. There's not enough time for us to be dicking around, not when it could mean this team not getting their timing down. Got it?"
Zoo and Hina wilted at his sharp words, but nodded.
"Go from the top," Cole said. "Everyone reset, but this time, Liam, switch places with Zach.
Yeah, you'll be behind Ruby. Lucy, hop out. You too, Mila. Sorry, ladies, you're not right for this op. I want Gonzo and Ollie to take their place.
Liam opened his mouth, but caught himself. I gave him a quick nod, letting him know it was all right. Cole had been making these switches and substitutions for the past 2 days, trying to get the best chemistry in the group. We were getting there, but the birthing process had been painful, and I was feeling each day passing like a strike to the back of the head. I would have given anything for Vida to be here next to me. I checked in with Nico every single day to see if he'd gotten another status update from them, but the last contact they'd made had been to let us know they had safely arrived in Kansas.
Begin!
And the dance started all over again. We moved into the garage two at a time. Gav, at my left, grunted as he dropped down to his knee. He pretended to cover Josh and Sarah as they pretended to zip-tie Zoo's and Hina's hands and feet.
Remember,
Cole was shouting, his hands cupped around his mouth.
The point is to be as silent and fast as possible. Do not fire unless your life depends on it. Get the PSFs down silently so they can't alert the camp controllers.
Zack and I bolted forward, him covering me as I ducked into a gap between two pallets meant to represent the control room. I reached a hand out toward Lucy, who was now posing as the camp controller at the helm of the camp's security. She took a generous step back, her eyes widening in what I thought was real alarm. My stomach clenched. Zack went through the motions of restraining the other kid posing as a camp controller. Then we were at the back of the pack, joining the others as they hit the other end of the hall, and we mimed going up a flight of stairs. Liam said something under his breath that made Mike, Gonzo, Ollie, and Sarah burst into laughter.
Stop! Cole called. Lee, you're out. You too, Mike.
Liam swung around, a look of total disbelief on his face.
Excuse me? You?
Cole repeated slowly, as if Liam's hearing had been the problem.
Are out. What the hell for?
Liam spun toward me, gesturing with his hands, asking me for something I had no intention of giving him. The minute the words had left Cole's lips, relief had flooded my system. Liam's expression changed abruptly, darkening as he shook his head and twisted back around in the direction of his brother.
Why? I've done everything you asked. Both me and Mike have experience hitting trucks. So why?
The kids around us began to shuffle their feet and look away, the tension swiftly moving from awkward to painful.
Because, Cole said, jumping down from the ladder, I decided 12 is too many. You guys are practically tripping over each other. We need to be in and out faster and quieter. If you take this personally, you're an idiot. That's bullshit, Liam said, his hands on his hips. You just want me out of this. Well, your attitude isn't doing you any favors either, baby brother, he said, holding out his hand. Your helmet and gun. You go cool off somewhere. Mike, I need you as another PSF. Third door on the right. Yes? You got it.
Liam ripped the gun strap off his shoulder, pushing it into his brother's chest, and unbuckled the helmet, letting it fall to the floor. He turned on his heel and strode toward the garage's tunnel door, his body rigid with stiff, furious lines. I held up one finger to Cole, not waiting to get a negative response from him, and followed Liam out. He was already a good 10 feet into the tunnel before I caught sight of him and called, Hey! He stopped, but didn't turn around. I unclipped my own helmet and approached slowly, recognizing the red staining the back of his neck, the way his hands were clenched into fists, the veins stood out in his forearms. He had such a tight grip. Liam, I said softly. Look at me.
What? He said, plucking at his fatigues. Did you need me to hand over these two?
I want you to calm down, I said. I'm sorry, but you know it has to be this way.
And which way is that? He asked, The one where you stand there silently and let me get dismissed like a kid being sent to time out?
I let out a sound of frustration.
We have to listen to him. There has to be some kind of order here, structure. Otherwise, this whole thing will fall apart.
Liam stared at me, disbelief fading into a humorless smile.
I get it, he said as he started walking again. Believe me, Ruby, I get it.
By the time we filed back into the ranch 6 hours later, he was long gone. Zoo was waiting for me in the bunk room, a folded piece of paper clutched in her hands. She watched me as I read it, her eyes making my heart ache.
Finding Liv. Good luck.
I wasn't upset.
I was furious. He left without taking any kind of backup again? I said, pulling my shirt up over my head and kicking off my fatigues.
Zoo had already changed into the oversized shirt and boxers she slept in.
Didn't he?
She nodded, then held up her notebook with the message,
What's going on?
She flipped the page.
Why are you acting like idiots?
Did Chubbs tell you to ask me that?
Zoo went back to the first page, underlining the first question twice.
What's going on?
Just a disagreement, I assured her, the little lie already gnawing at me. I pulled the worn shirt and sweats on and sat down next to her on my bunk.
Looks like it's just you and me tonight.
I lay down on my back and she followed suit. I was grateful for the warmth of her next to me, her presence, which always seemed to sweeten sour situations. I'd spent the rest of the simulation feeling like someone was walking over my grave. I still couldn't shake the feeling. She picked up her pen and notebook again and wrote,
Are you okay?
I've been better, I admitted.
You keep going to your bad place, she added. I have one too. I get trapped there if I stay too long.
I shifted so I could wrap an arm around her shoulders and draw her in closer.
You don't have to go there alone.
She paused, as if collecting her thoughts.
Do you remember right before I left East River? I said I had something to tell you, but I didn't know how.
I do. Thinking about that day was like raking nails down over my heart.
It wasn't really that I didn't know how. I wanted the words to be better, more beautiful, I guess. But Lee told me it doesn't matter. Sometimes simplest is best.
She turned the page, scribbling the words down quickly. The sound of the pen against the paper was strangely soothing.
It doesn't matter what you do, it won't ever change how we feel about you. I'm proud to be your friend.
I stared at her, swallowing the knot in my throat.
Thank you. I feel the same way about you. The luckiest day of my life was when I met you. You saw how scared I was.
It wasn't because you were scared, Zoo wrote, then added quickly, Maybe a little, but do you know how I knew we could trust you?
I shook my head, fascinated by this insight into her judgment.
When the people following you, looking for you, started to get really close, you were going to run again, not hide behind Betty. It was because you didn't want them to accidentally find me either, right?
That's right.
She put out her hands as if to say, Well, there you go. She picked up her pen again.
That meant you were never going to purposefully put us in danger. That you were a good person.
That's an awfully big assumption, I said. It could have just been me panicking, not thinking at all.
Zoo gave a little shrug.
Better to risk helping someone than regret what you could have done. Lee said that.
That sounds like him, I said dryly.
And that was the exact reason Chubbs and I had to be so vigilant about every new kid we crossed paths with.
Are you and Lee fighting about the memory thing?
Ah, So he or one of the others had told her.
Not exactly.
But then, what were we doing exactly? Not being friends to each other. Not being whatever it was we had been.
It's complicated. After what I did to him, it's been nothing but complicated. And I accept full responsibility, but...
Zhu, as always, zeroed in on the root of the situation.
Do you think he doesn't forgive you?
Reluctantly, I reached around her, pulling out the Beach Boys CD case from the dresser drawer. The paper was soft and beginning to tear at the center from how many times I'd opened and read it and refolded it again. I don't know why I felt like I had to keep rereading it every night, punishing myself with it. Zhu read it, the crease between her dark eyebrows deepening. She clearly recognized his handwriting, but when she looked up, I saw confusion, not understanding.
What?
She wrote, "What does this prove?" The fact that he felt like he had to write this is a pretty big clue he thinks I'll do it again. Take his memories, I mean. Send him away. Zhu calmly folded the note back up and then reached up to smack me in the nose with it, with her patented, "Are you serious?" look. Seeing I still wasn't getting it, she picked up her notebook and pen again.
"Or he wrote it because he was scared someone else would make you do it, like his brother. He says he wants to stay. This means he wants to stay with you, with us, even knowing what happened. Did you even ask him about it? Does he know you took it?"
She gave me a very different look now.
"You shouldn't take things that don't belong to you."
"I haven't talked to him about it," I admitted.
"Did you miss this?"
She pointed to the last line. I shook my head, swallowing hard. "I saw." Zhu studied me for a moment, dark eyes penetrating, flickering with understanding.
"Do you feel like you don't deserve it?"
I think he deserves better than the best I could offer him. It was the first time I'd admitted it out loud, and somehow putting it into the open only added to the weight of truth. I felt sick, lightheaded. "He deserves better than me." She looked torn between kicking me and hugging me, but settled on the latter. Too late, I'd realized how this would affect her, how someone already so panicked and afraid would react to seeing the people she thought of as her rocks crumbling.
"When he comes back, you have to talk to him, okay?"
"Okay," I said, not as certain as she was that he'd want to talk to me.
"If you go to the bad place again," she said simply, "tell one of us so we can help you back out."
"I don't mean to be such a burden," I whispered.
"All I ever wanted to do was protect you."
"It's not a burden if people are willing to carry it," she pointed out and, having made her final point, let herself drift to sleep. I rolled onto my side and tried to do the same. It must have taken at some point, because then I was dreaming, walking the damp, dark hallways of HQ, taking the path to Albin's cluttered office, eyes tracking the exposed light bulbs overhead. The next moment, I was in a different hallway, cold tile under my feet, small hands fisted in my shirt. I jerked back, my mind ripping out of the foggy haze of sleep, scrambling away from Zhu's terrified look. The lights in the lower-level hallway were switched off, as they always were after midnight. She stood in contrast to the shadows, worry overtaking confusion on her features. Her brow creased as she stepped toward me tentatively, reaching for the hand I'd pressed over my heart, trying to steady it.
"Sorry," I told her. "Sorry, sleepwalking. Stress, it's..."
I couldn't get my tongue around the right words, but she seemed to understand. Zhu took me firmly in hand and walked me back toward our room, never once letting me stumble. My head felt light enough to drift away, and when I climbed back into bed, I banged my clumsy knees against the metal frame. The last thing I was aware of was Zhu stroking my hair, smoothing it again and again, until the pain pounding in my skull eased and I was able to breathe normally again. In the earliest hours of the next morning, the op team and I set off for the open desert of Nevada. 15. I kept my belly down flat against the wash, ignoring the tinge of pain in the muscles of my lower back. It seemed wrong for the desert to be so damn cold, but I guess without the sun and without the benefit of thick-leaved trees and brush, there was nothing to trap the heat of the previous day. Nameless mountains hovered behind us, the lighter of two deep shades of black. I kept looking over my shoulder as the hours passed, watching their jagged shapes lighten to the color of a new bruise. Aside from the yellow, dried-out clusters of low, prickly desert shrubs, there wasn't much of anything else to look for.
"What was that?"
I heard Gav ask.
"Is that a rattlesnake? I heard rattling."
"That was me drinking from my canteen, dumbass," Gonzo said.
"Jesus, dude, did you leave your balls in California?"
I shushed them, and then shushed them again when one of the girls started complaining about having to pee.
"I told you not to drink that much water on the drive," Sarah told her. "You never listen to me."
"Sorry, I don't have the bladder of a freaking sloth."
"You mean camel," Sarah corrected.
"I meant sloth," the other girl said.
"I read somewhere they only have to go once a week."
I rolled my eyes heavenward for strength, wondering if this was what Vida felt like every moment of every day.
"Status."
Cole's voice was clipped in my ear. "Same as an hour ago," I said as I pressed my earpiece. "Nothing so far. Over." We'd taken the two SUVs down to this barren stretch of Interstate 80 and were dropped off on the side of the road. Lucy and Mike turned the cars around and drove them back to Lodi. Cole and I had mapped out the sweet spot on the highway in terms of distance from the camp. Just far enough from the camp that no one would notice the vehicles making a quick stop, but the only cover we had to hide in was the wash running along the cracked asphalt. We curved our bodies to fit its shape and waited. It was another 10 minutes before my ears picked up on the faint hum of a distant engine. I knew I hadn't imagined it when the others began to squirm, trying to get a better look at the lip of the wash. A few seconds later, the first pinpricks of light appeared, headlights that grew in size and intensity, slicing through the darkness. I glanced down the wash, and there it was, three bursts of light from a flashlight. Ollie had been stationed there to check the markings on the truck. It was the right one. Zach slapped my back, the excitement bringing a grin to his face. I felt it like a jolt of electricity to my system and flashed a smile back at him as I stood. I walked out into the middle of the road, hands shaking only a little bit, as the semi-trailer truck barreled down the road. I held up my hands as the headlights blinded me. I couldn't see the details of the driver behind the windshield, but I saw the quick movement as his hand went to strike the horn. I let the invisible hands in my mind reach out blindly, feeling for his, stretching, 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 and connecting. The truck rolled to a stop 3 feet away from me. There was a flurry of movement at my left as the makeshift tact team came scrambling up from the wash, moving toward the rear of the truck to open the trailer and jump inside. I pushed the earpiece as I jogged around to open the passenger side door of the truck's cab.
"We have our ride. Over."
"Fantastic. Proceed with second phase."
The driver was frozen behind the wheel, waiting for his instructions from me. I searched through his memories and teased one up from the week before, of him making this exact ride in. I pulled that to the forefront of his mind and said one word. "Drive." I crouched as low as I could in the cab, drawing the black ski mask down over my face. I pulled myself up to look over the dash periodically to make sure we were still heading in the right direction. The truck driver had been blasting some rap music that was angry and pounding enough to set me on edge, so I reached over and switched it off, missing the exact moment the gray, sun-bleached two-story structure and its 10-foot fence came into view. "In sight," I said. "Everyone good at the back of the bus?"
"Peachy," was Zach's reply.
"ETA?"
2 minutes. I took another steadying breath as we turned and headed off the highway onto a dirt road. The two PSFs at the gate dragged the thing open as the driver, a thick-waisted, bearded man in a short-sleeved button-down, went through the motions of turning the truck and reversing through it, his face blank. A tarp was spread out over the loading area adjacent to the main building. There were already flatbed carts out, waiting for the supplies to be unloaded. Two PSFs were sitting on them, smoking, but threw the cigarettes away and stood as the truck backed toward them. The others, having secured the gate, were hurrying back over as I took one last deep breath.
"We're in. Prepare for action," I said.
"Two PSFs positioned at your door. Two more coming around the back."
"Silent and fast," Cole reminded us. 10 minutes starts now."
A fifth approached the driver's window, calling out a,
"Morning, Frank!"
I pushed the image of Frank rolling down the window into his mind, leaned over him, and, before the PSF's eyes could so much as widen, had my gun pointed directly at his face. He was young, around Kate's age, maybe. At the sight of me, he lost the easy smile on his face. His whole body pulled back in alarm, and he reached for his rifle.
"What the fu-"
"Hands where I can see them." I couldn't control Frank and the PSF at the same time, and Gonzo and Ollie eliminated my need to. One of them cracked him on the back of his skull with the butt of his own rifle, and the other had him face down in the dirt, gagged and secured with zip ties. He was hauled behind the truck, where four other limp forms were already propped up. I knew some of the kids hadn't understood why we'd run through this so many times, but I think, now that we were here, they saw the answer in how smoothly we assembled into formation. The real benefit of simulations was to train your nerves to behave, to make something like this feel as normal as waking up and walking to the showers each morning. It seemed to have worked. Even as we approached the door the PSFs had left open and quietly stepped inside of the building, the group felt as steady as stone to me. We certainly looked menacing enough, dressed in all black and wearing ski masks. The hall was dark, but a stream of light spilled out of one of the rooms, the third one down on the right. I felt myself pause. The smell of bleach tinged with lemon, shoe polish, and human odor gripped me in a stranglehold. Some part of me recognized that it made sense for this camp to smell almost exactly like the infirmary in Thurmond. Why wouldn't they use the same military-ordered cleaning supplies? But more than anything, it rubbed up against my nerves. Gav stepped into place, kneeling down and aiming as the others crept forward. Voices trickled down the tile from the open door I'd spotted before. I waved the kids forward and crept along the wall with them until Zach grabbed my arm and pointed to the door marked CR. Control room. That was our cue. As we ducked out of formation, I cast one look back into the open room. Four PSFs were sitting around the table, uniform jackets slung onto a nearby couch and the backs of their chairs, as they laughed and smoked, dealing cards around a cramped table. As Gav and Gonzo filled the doorway, I saw one look up, and then look again, diving for a weapon he never reached. The Blues upended their table, threw the PSFs against the wall, and silenced them before they could gasp out a warning over their radios. That made 9. Nico had reviewed the footage from Pat and Tommy repeatedly, counting the different faces in uniform he saw. 2 camp controllers, 13 PSFs, 15 targets total. Zach and I pressed ourselves against the wall, and I reached out and knocked against the control room door.
"Enter!"
a voice called. It was a good thing we hadn't tried to charge it, The thing was locked from the inside. I heard a buzz and then a click, and Zack didn't waste a moment before pushing it open with his shoulder. Inside there were two young women, both in black button-down shirts and slacks. The room was a wall of monitors that kissed up against a row of computers. Most of the screens were set on a series of bunks and the children sleeping in them. But they switched over to the hall, to the outside area, the recreational room across the way, as we stepped inside. The one who was monitoring the screens dropped her mug of coffee down her front when she spotted what was happening across the wall. The other, standing in front of some kind of panel of switches and dials, turned and let out a small scream when she saw us. Zack had her pressed up against the ceiling with his abilities a full second after I was already in the camp controller's mind. An avalanche of faces, sounds, colors, landscapes streamed through my mind, thundering down over me. I searched for the relevant ones, information about how they reported in statuses, the timing of it, as Zack brought the other screaming woman down, gagged her with cloth, and zip-tied her safely away from the controls to one of the pipes running along the far right wall.
"Done," he called. "We have 8 minutes. Erasing camera footage."
Nico had shown him how to set the footage back, to loop through already recorded images, making an educated guess about the programs they used. It must have been close to reality, because Zack punched a fist in the air when he was done. "Get the rooms unlocked upstairs," I told him, pointing to the nearest computer. "Password is capital P, capital S, capital F, 13938, exclamation mark, asterisk. Did you get that?"
"Affirmative."
He relayed the next part to the rest of the team who were, hopefully, already heading up the stairs.
"Unlocking doors."
I brought up the memory of the woman sitting at one of the computers, the message she'd relayed to the PSF system, exactly how I wanted her to do it now, and then again in another 2 hours. When I pulled back, I took away her memories of Zack and I entering. She simply nodded and went about her business, standing in front of the monitors, her eyes unseeing, her face a blank slate.
"Control is out of play. Over," I said.
"Roger that," came Cole's relieved reply. "Proceed upstairs with the others."
Zack hit the button beside the door, unlocking it, and stepped out. I was right behind him when he jumped back, raised his gun, and aimed.
"It's me," came a familiar voice. "It's me, don't shoot!"
Disbelief, dumb and mute disbelief, stole over me as I confirmed who was standing at the other end of Zack's rifle. Liam.
"What the hell, man?" Zack shouted, throwing a furious punch toward him. "Jesus, I almost shot you!"
I hadn't moved. It didn't make sense. It wasn't him. He had gone to find Olivia. He wouldn't have come in after us. He couldn't have been so stupid. Not Liam. Not Liam. I was so fixated on his face as I yanked my ski mask up and over mine that I didn't see the red-haired woman behind him, wild curls tumbling around her long-sleeved black shirt. She wore black jeans and boots, but I didn't get a clear image of her face until she lowered the camera that was clicking wildly, capturing everything around her. "Who?" I heard myself say in a low, furious voice. "The hell is this?"
"Status?" Cole asked. "Jim, status."
Liam matched my stony look with one of his own.
"This is Alice from Amplify."
"Dude,"
Zack said, shaking his head.
"Dude, this is crazy."
Alice looked young, late 20s, maybe, but a clean face, free of makeup, made her appear only a few years older than the rest of us. She was taller than Liam, slender, but strong enough to haul a backpack that looked like it weighed twice as much as she did.
"Nice to meet you," she said. "Wow, this is wild."
Liam wasn't looking at me for my approval, just my reaction. All at once, adrenaline kicked back into my system, throwing me into action. Accept, adapt, act. I pressed a finger to my earpiece, cutting off Cole's request for status, and turned toward the staircase at the end of the hall.
"Liam is here," I told him, "with a reporter from Amplify."
Static trickled over the line. Zach shot me an uncomfortable look as we hit the stairs, as if he, too, were picturing Cole's reaction to this. Finally, he answered.
"Say again?"
I repeated the information to him again as we rounded the corner of the stairs and came through the door that the team had left propped open. The strange, familiar smell I'd breathed in on the way up finally had an explanation as we burst through the doors. The gagged and bound soldiers were secured against the same wall they'd been using to stencil and paint a message. Obedience corrects deviance. The op team had been in the process of ushering the kids out of the 5 dark rooms lining the opposite wall, trying to coax them to come out. I saw the problem immediately.
"Take off your masks," I told the others. "It's all right. The cameras are off."
The kids wouldn't come out until they saw that we were kids, too, that they weren't being tricked or picked up by a different set of monsters in black uniforms. One of the teen boys from the first room stuck his head out, saw the gun Gav was holding, and immediately retreated back inside. He would have slammed the door shut if Josh hadn't caught it. Alice's camera was clicking like an insect, trying to take in the sight from every angle. I spun on my heel and knocked the camera out of her hand, wishing like hell she hadn't had the strap around her neck so it would have smashed against the tiled floor.
"Do you mind?" I snapped.
God, it was bad enough the kids were in here, but couldn't she at least give them a second of peace to collect themselves?
"Ruby," Liam started, but Alice waved him off. "It's fine, I get it."
But I saw her lift her camera again anyway, this time set to record video instead. Clearly, she didn't get it.
5 minutes, Cole warned. "Are you heading out?"
I jogged to the nearest door, looking inside. The wooden bunks creaked as weight shifted on them, and faces squinted at me. I reached in and turned the lights on so they'd have a better view of my face. The stench of sweat rolled out, slamming into me before the whimpers and whispers of fear came. Dozens of small faces emerged from the dark, hands held up to shield their eyes. Oh my God. They were wearing those thin, papery uniforms, coated by whatever color they'd been classified as. I felt my stomach start to churn. One girl turned, flashing the Psi ID number someone had hastily scrawled across the back of her shirt in permanent marker. These were really kids. 9, 10, 11, 12, with only a few clearly older than 14. All of them with those hollow cheeks carved out by hunger. Narrowed by need, if not for food, then for everything else.
"You made it!"
The longer I stared at the boy that pushed his way to the door of room 3, the harder it was for me to believe that it was Pat. They'd shaved down his dark mass of hair, stripped him down to a blue, scratchy cotton t-shirt and shorts. He'd been here less than a week, and already he'd let his edges bleed into the darkness of this place. All at once, the boys in Tommy's room gasped and reached for him as he stepped into the hall, pleading him in these small voices to come back.
"At night, you don't leave the cabin,"
one of the older girls in cabin 27 had told me.
"You don't leave, even if it's burning down. They'll just say you were trying to escape, and that's the only reason they need to shoot you."
None of the other kids followed Tommy and Pat out. My mind scrambled to come up with something to avoid us having to carry them out.
"My name is Ruby," I said quickly, "and I'm one of you. All of us here are like you, except for the woman with the camera. We're getting you out of here, taking you to somewhere safe, but we have to move fast as you can, without hurting yourselves or anyone around you. Follow them." I pointed to Gonzo and Ollie.
Fast, okay?
Damn it. They still weren't moving. We weren't moving, and time was ticking down so loudly in my ears, I couldn't distinguish the seconds from my heartbeat. I opened my mouth, wondering what else I could say to them. What were the words that had convinced me to take the pills Kate had offered? Or had I just realized it was my last chance of ever getting out? For them, maybe it was a matter of shock. We'd come charging in so quickly, they couldn't wrap their heads around the reality of it.
Rosa, I called. Rosa Cruz? Is there a Rosa Cruz here?
No one spoke or raised their hands, but I saw a small movement out of the corner of my eye, a shifting that was as subtle as someone straightening up. I took a step around Tommy, scanning the 10 faces of room 6. There was a girl at the back, nearly as tall as I was, maybe 13 or 14. She must have had long, glossy curls at one point in her life, but someone had gone to town hacking it all off. I didn't see a trace of Senator Cruz in her face, aside from the warm olive tone of her skin and her dark eyes. But when she tilted her head and shifted her gaze toward me, defying her fear, just for that second, that was all her mother.
Rosa, I said, your mom is waiting for you.
She flinched at the sudden attention, but after a deep breath, she stepped out of her pitch-black room like she was tearing away from the last grip of a nightmare. Rosa's hands clenched at her sides. Her breathing came hard and fast as her eyes darted around.
Look at me, I told her, holding out my hand. Just at me. This is really happening. I'll get you out of here. Okay?
Okay. Her trembling, cold fingers touched the tips of mine, sliding into place. The tension bunching her shoulders didn't relax until my grip on her tightened. The other girls in her room flowed out behind her, and it was only then that the other kids lost that last bit of hesitation and followed.
Home base, I said, pressing my earpiece. Initiating evac.
2 minutes,
Cole said, sounding a hell of a lot more stressed than I felt. This was good. They were coming with us. They trusted us. The gratitude I felt for that small fact made my eyes prick with tears. The others followed, lining up one by one and moving quickly. Feet slapped against the tile, smearing out the puddle of wet paint that had drifted from the forgotten can. Some of them stopped to look at the 2 bound PSFs, but there was no laughter, no smiles, no cheers. Of course not. It must have felt like they were moving through a dream. I guided Rosa into the line, glancing at the wall where the soldiers had been writing out that message. The kids leaned against it and used it to brace themselves as they rounded the corner down into the stairwell, smearing that same red paint, tracking their hands and fingerprints through it. Alice stood frozen in front of it, lifting her camera one last time. It was the last clear, still image I had before the night sped up, gliding into a blur that carried us down the stairs, down the main hall, and out the very same door we had come through. The blast of cold air washed away the pounding heat from my blood. I shook the fear off and let myself imagine it, how good it would feel when this was Thurmond we were walking out of, when I passed through that gate one last time. Kate may have gotten me out, but until that moment, I'm not sure I'd fully recognized that I was still a prisoner of that place, and it wasn't the cure that would give me the feeling of finally being freed from this horrible reality. It was knowing, with certainty, that I would never be forced to go back. Zack helped Liam lift his motorbike onto the back of the truck and gave Alice the lift she needed to get up into it. I caught his questioning look as he took her hand and nodded. She had to come back with us. She'd seen too much, was a security risk. Gonzo and Ollie were the last to climb into the truck's trailer, having dragged the PSFs we'd left outside into the interior of the camp, along with the secured truck driver. The kids were forced to sit on the plastic-wrapped pallets and boxes, some of them clutching yellow and orange glow sticks and flashlights we'd given them, so they wouldn't feel like they were being locked in total darkness. As I rolled the trailer door down, I saw Liam sitting with his back against the siding, his arms resting over his knees, watching me.
I pulled the door firmly into place and secured it with the latch. Zack was already up in the front seat, ripping the GPS out of the console. He rolled down the window and tossed it outside. One less way for them to track us when they figured out what was happening. I was the one to run to open the gates. The fence wasn't electrified, but the PSFs had managed to secure it with a padlock. I turned to look at Zack and shook my head. He waved me back, and I climbed into the cab with him.
"Brace yourself,"
he warned, relaying the message to me and the whole team in the back. The truck lurched forward and barreled through the gate, sending pieces flying as if they'd been made of styrofoam. A section caught on the front hubcap and sparked against the ground, but was knocked away as we veered onto the highway, and we sped away before the sun had the chance to start rising at our backs. 16. We drove a full 4 hours before ditching the semi-trailer truck in Reno. In an ideal world, we would have taken it straight to Lodi, only stopping once to let the kids relieve their bladders and stretch their legs, but it was marked with military insignias. Someone was bound to notice it if we kept going. Senator Cruz had arranged for an old Greyhound bus to be brought down from Oregon and left at Reno's city limits, warning it was the only time she'd be able to put this particular contact into play as the former state governor, her college classmate, had been careful to never entangle himself too deeply in matters of the federal coalition and had been rewarded by Gray with the right to keep his job. Zack and I helped each kid down, and I couldn't stop the small smile on my face at seeing the way they all seemed to want to spin around in the warm sunlight. Rosa was one of the last off, bypassing Zack's hands for mine.
"Okay?" I asked her. "How are you doing?"
She stretched her arms back and forth, swinging them around. I made sure that I kept the smile on my face so she'd know it was okay to let herself believe this would work out, something I'd learned from Kate. I wondered what she'd think of all this as we lifted the boxes of food and medical supplies off the truck, putting them in the undercarriage of the Greyhound bus. When I saw her again, I would make sure she knew the full magnitude of what she had done for me. I wanted to believe that if I felt all of these things, if I brought her face to mind and focused on it, she'd somehow be able to tell I was thinking about her, that I hadn't forgotten her, that I was coming for her. Liam walked Alice to the bus, ignoring the glances the team shared as they passed by them. After exchanging a few last quiet words with her, he got back on his motorcycle, explaining to Zack he was going to ride behind us. I held a hand out to Rosa, who took it gratefully. Zack jumped into the driver's seat and craned his neck back, counting to make sure that everyone was on. The kids squeezed into the seats and onto the floor. After a moment of petrified uncertainty, the older kids began to play with the vents, fiddling with the lights. "Pull your curtains all the way closed," I told them. "It's going to be another 3 or 4 hours to where we're going."
"Where is that?"
one of the kids asked.
"California!" Gavin sang out, pounding his meaty hands down on the seat in front of him. "Let's go already!" "Seatbelts," Zack called as he started the bus.
Then, realizing there was a speaker system, repeated the order through that.
"Seatbelts. Welcome to Psy Bus Services. I'm Zack, and I'll be your driver on this epic quest to freedom. If you look out your windows, but obviously don't because Ruby just told you not to, you can give Nevada the finger as we pull away."
That, at least, made a few of them crack a smile. I gave Zack a thumbs up, and he returned it. The bus lurched forward, and we were off again, really cruising. I smiled despite myself, winging along on my own cloud of happiness. I didn't come down, not for a second, until I glanced at Rosa. She had taken the window seat, drawn her legs up to her chest to tuck under her shirt, and pressed her face into her knees. "Rosa?" I said, putting a hand on her back. The number on her shirt pocket, 9229, had been her whole identity in that place. I wanted her to hear her name, to feel human,
You shouldn't have come. We're not ready yet. We're still broken.
No, I said quickly. No, you're not. You're different, that's all.
They said the good ones were the ones that died,
she said, and I noticed a faint scar running down her left cheek, a narrow, spiraling pink line. What could have left a mark like that, other than someone intentionally scratching it into her skin?
That we were all wrong, and we'd never get out. But they never did anything to help us. I want to be fixed. We all did. We did everything they asked, but it wasn't enough.
If they made you feel that way, then they were the ones who were wrong, I said. It took me a moment to realize why the words came so easily. Clancy, how was this any different from what he kept trying to tell me? I shifted uncomfortably, trying to think of Kate instead, how she had talked me down after I escaped Thurmond. The most important thing you ever did was learn how to survive. Don't let anyone make you feel like you shouldn't have, or that you deserved to be in that camp.
You were in one too? Rosa asked. You got out, and things got better?
They're getting there, I told her. Your mom is helping us.
There. One small, trembling smile. Has she been wearing her red suit?
Red suit? I repeated. Rosa nodded, finally sitting back against the seat.
Mom had this dark red suit she always wore when she had to go in for a big vote or debate. She said it scared the old white dudes who kept trying to shut her up or make her sit down.
No, I said. But you know what? I don't think she really needs it anymore. The girl spread her fingers over her blue uniform shorts.
And you're totally... You're sure she wants to... I mean, I would understand if she didn't want to see me. I was with my gran when they came. Mom never saw me after I got damaged. Changed, I mean.
She wants you, I said, the words spilling out from some place I hadn't dared to touch since I'd left Thurmond. More than anything, it doesn't matter what you can do or what any of the people at that camp told you. She's there, and she's waiting for you. They were the right words. I knew it by the pain that came with wrenching them up from where I'd buried them. I knew it because they were the exact words I'd fantasized about someone saying to me just before Grams would arrive to rescue me. She turned toward me.
Thank you for coming to get us.
I wasn't sure I could trust my voice, but I said, You're very welcome.
You're going to get more kids out, right? She asked. Not just us.
Everyone, I reassured her, leaning my head back against the seat and closing my eyes. It was the only way I knew of to keep from crying. It was more than just a possibility. We had done this. We could do it again at Thurmond. We could make this moment everyone's reality. Every single kid. Zack brought the bus into the garage as Cole had instructed. The kids who'd stayed behind were there, opening the large rolling door we'd kept shut and locked the whole time we'd used the space. Senator Cruz and Cole stood away inside. The woman had her hands folded in front of her, and while she seemed otherwise serene, even from a distance, I could see the white-knuckled hold she had on herself. I pulled back the curtain and leaned away so Rosa could see her as well. The senator must have spotted her at that exact moment, because she lost the fight she'd been waging to control herself and ran for the bus's doors just as I stood to let Rosa pass. The girl launched herself at her mother from the top step and nearly took them both to the ground. The other kids looked away. We'd explained, on the drive back to California, what had happened in Los Angeles, and knowing that many of their parents had been involved in the federal coalition,
or had simply lived in the area, hadn't sugarcoated the harsh reality. "But we'll help you find them," I'd promised. "If Senator Cruz doesn't know for certain where they are, we'll try searching the different networks for clues." Cole had remained where he was, nodding to the team members who came down from the bus, slapping their backs and proudly congratulating them as they spilled out and formed a cluster around him. There was a backpack at his feet, but he didn't reach for it. I knew what was about to happen, but frankly, I was too damn pissed off myself to try to prevent it. He signaled to Senator Cruz. With Rosa still pressed against her side, she said calmly, "All right, everyone, follow me. We'll get you a nice warm shower, some new clothes, and a good meal. How does that sound?" Liam and the Amplify reporter had their path toward us cut off as the Oasis kids streamed by, forming a line that followed the senator to the tunnel down, passing Zoo, Hina, Mike, and Kylie, who'd come running to meet us. They joined the group of kids who had been left behind here, standing on the white crescent moon painted onto the cement. The moment he was within range, Cole stooped to pick up the backpack and tossed it to Liam, who sagged under its weight as he caught it.
"I took the liberty,"
Cole began, his voice edged with ice,
"of packing your things. You're finished here. Get on your little bike and go home."
"I'm not going anywhere."
Liam's expression hardened as he shoved the bag back at his brother.
"And I'm just getting started. You can't make me go."
Cole let out a derisive laugh, but I was the one to answer. The words sprang into my mind, filled my mouth like bile. "No, but I could." I saw Zoo jerk her gaze from Liam to me, her lips parting in shock. It was nothing compared to the pain of seeing Liam set his jaw and blanch, his eyes burning with a terrible, silent disappointment. How dare he act like this was the real betrayal here? He'd gone behind my back for all of this. I'd sensed he was keeping some kind of secret, but nothing of this magnitude, nothing that risked the safety and lives of every kid here. And why? Because he was mad Cole dismissed his idea? He didn't understand how these things worked. He'd left the league, run away. He'd checked out of training too early to understand that you fought fire with fire.
"You went behind my back,"
Cole said, heat pouring off the words,
"and somehow contacted Amplify when I specifically told you not to. You were stupid enough to email confidential files, risking Gray's internet crawlers picking them up and tracing them back to us. You clearly lied about going to meet that other group of kids and met with Amplify instead, wasting our gas and our time. You interrupted an op in play and endangered every single kid participating in it, including yourself and the ones we rescued. And to top it off, Liam, you brought a civilian into play. I really hope it was worth it to you, because while you're getting the hell out of here, she is staying where we can keep her secured and locked up until this is all over."
"Excuse me?"
Alice stepped up, brown eyes flashing. To Liam, she muttered,
"You said he'd be pissed, but this is reality."
Cole finished, holding out his hand.
"Give me your camera."
She leaned away, pressing her hand against the device, which was now stowed away safely in her bag.
"Listen to me when I say this," she said, "because I mean it literally. Over my dead body. You think I'm scared of you? I survived the DC bombing and covered 8 major city riots, including the one in Atlanta that killed my camera guy and my fiancé.
So go ahead and try it, asshole."
"Okay, sweetheart," Cole said. "You can keep your camera. May the tender, glowing light from the digital screen keep you company when we lock you in your new room and throw away the key."
"That's..."
Liam held out an arm, stopping her. The woman didn't shrink back, though, and her ivory skin didn't lose its tinge of pink.
"You're right," he said.
I did go behind your back and find out how to contact Amplify. I met with Alice and her team, but only after I found Olivia and Brett, who I told not to come in until I was sure being here would guarantee a lower chance of getting killed than trying to survive alone in the wild. I downloaded files onto a flash drive to prove my story to Amplify. I never sent them. And you know why I did all of those things? Because no matter what you said in Los Angeles, this hasn't been anything that resembles a democracy, let alone a fresh start. You've ignored everyone's ideas in favor of your own, and you haven't once listened to what I've tried to say, even though you know nothing about our lives and what we've been through. You like the fight, but some of us don't.
Not your best argument, Cole said, gesturing to the team, considering today worked out pretty damn well.
He's telling the truth, Alice insisted. We never would have asked him to risk sending the files digitally. He only brought us printouts and only a few to prove his affiliation with the League, or whatever the hell it is you're calling yourselves now.
Liam blew out a harsh breath. We can use the footage Alice captured today. Deliver a media package to their contacts to run. A package that carries an actual message. That proves something. Even if it's just that people have nothing to fear from us kids. You don't get it. It doesn't matter if we get all the kids out of the camps and blast through every damn fence and wall between us and them. If we don't change people's minds about us, then where the hell are those kids going to go?
Cole crossed his arms over his chest and said simply,
Bye, Liam.
I had started to turn, intending on following Cole to the tunnel, anger making my head throb, erasing every last trace of light inside my heart, when a voice piped up.
If he has to go, then so do I.
It was the green girl I'd seen a few nights ago, the one who had painted the crescent moon on Liam's helmet. That moment when I'd questioned who she was finally made sense. The symbol was how Alice identified him during their meetings.
For any particular reason? Cole prompted.
I covered for him.
She tossed her dark hair back over her shoulder.
I knew he was going to meet Alice, and I didn't tell anyone.
Me too, said Lucy, wringing her hands red. I lied about supplies he never brought in, and I don't really want to fight. I'm sorry.
Ditto, Kylie said. Not sorry, though.
And me,
piped up Anna, one of the Greens who'd made it out of Los Angeles.
I'm the one that showed him how to access and download the files.
Beside me, Zach scratched his head and looked up at the ceiling.
I might have showed him how he could, if he needed to, establish a contact procedure with someone.
I'm the one who asked Senator Cruz how she contacted someone in Amplify, said another one of the Greens.
So I guess I'm out too?
Me too, since...
Cole held up a hand, interrupting Sarah.
Okay, Christ, I get it, Spartacus. Y'all made your point.
He glanced over at me. I lifted a shoulder, letting him decide this one. I didn't trust my judgment in that moment, and, truthfully, if they were all interested in sabotaging our hit on Thurmond, I wouldn't have been sorry to see them go off and live somewhere safe and away, especially if Harry delivered on his promise of trained soldiers.
You get one shot, he told them. Prove to me this works the way you want it to, and we'll adapt our plan. But...
His voice turned sharp as the kids behind us began to chatter excitedly. I stepped closer to him, wanting to use Cole as a shield from the now obvious truth that most, if not all of them, had known what Liam was planning, and none of them had been inclined to let me in on it. They probably think it serves you right, a voice whispered in my head, for keeping them in the dark about getting rid of the agents. But the difference was... That had only been done to protect them.
Cole was absolutely right. Liam interrupting a carefully choreographed op and introducing an unknown variable could have ended badly for all of us, including the kids we were trying to rescue. A fresh wave of anger steamed through me.
But, he continued, you all stay here, and you cannot, for any reason, leave the ranch without getting permission. That includes you, Carrots.
Alice colored at the nickname, absently reaching up to smooth back her red hair. He took a step closer to her, lowering his voice.
I knew that look, the way his blue eyes hooded, how the otherwise friendly smile betrayed nothing of the contempt he felt.
Only his low, rough voice.
If you reveal our location to anyone at Amplify, I'll know.
Alice leaned toward Cole, her arms crossed over her chest. One brow went up in challenge. No, you won't. But I'm not in the business of getting kids killed, unlike you.
Hey, I warned, and clearly Liam must have mentioned something about me because she finally backed off. All right. Everyone good? Everyone cool?
Cole nodded, motioning for the others to start nodding too.
Great. Let's get the supplies off the bus and everything organized. Someone needs to tell me about the PSF's faces when they saw you.
The tension broke at that, Gav busting out laughing as he relayed a story about how one of the PSFs may or may not have pissed himself when he realized what he was up against. Zoo tried to catch my hand as I walked past her, but, in all honesty, I just wanted to be alone. I didn't care if it hurt her feelings. I didn't care that she was worried about me, and I didn't want to pretend that I was fine with this outcome. Losing focus was wasting time. It meant more dead kids I wouldn't be able to save. I wanted to check in with Nico about any news of Kate and whether or not Vida and Chubbs had checked in. Then I wanted to finalize the details for how I'd be taken back into Thurmond. I burned off what extra energy I had by taking the tunnel between the ranch and the garage at a run. The frustration drained out of me with each strike of my boots against the cement. I was through the kitchen, passing by bowls of pasta and pretzels the Oasis kids had picked up on their way, if I had to guess, to eat in the big room, when I finally heard him calling my name. I didn't slow down. Didn't let any part of me soften the armor of anger I wore. Liam ran to catch up to me.
Ruby! I want to talk to you.
Believe me? I told him. You don't. I continued down the hall until he grabbed my arm and spun me around. I stared up into his face, looking past the strain, the shadow of scruff along his jaw and cheeks, to the intensity of his eyes, and for a single instant, my body confused the need to kill him with the need to kiss him. I yanked myself away and pushed the door open to the stairwell.
Are you mad because I didn't tell you, or because you know I'm right?
He demanded.
Because as far as I can tell, it's both.
I think Cole gave you a pretty decent outline of the many reasons to be pissed at you, I said, turning as I reached the first landing. He was right at my heels, trying to back me into the same dark corner I'd stolen a kiss from him in. And somehow, that only made me angrier, like he was doing it on purpose.
I'm right, Ruby, he said, taking my wrist again.
Touch me one more time, I warned him, and you'll regret it. He released his hold on me and backed off.
Please, listen to me.
No, I said. I don't even want to look at you right now. Liam's smile turned mocking.
Because I dare to disagree with Cole, who could never be wrong, not about anything.
I whirled back on him, shoving at his chest with both hands.
Because you came within an inch of being blasted away at the wrong end of Zack's gun. Because you could have died, and I wouldn't have been able to stop it. Because you didn't think, and everything we've been working toward could have fallen up.
His eyes flashed, blue flames, as he pulled me to him. He kissed me.
He kissed me the way I'd kissed him in the forest at the edge of the East River camp. In the darkness, the smell of damp earth and dust and leather wrapped around us. Hard, desperate, his hands fisted in my hair, mine in his jacket. He kissed me, and I let him, because I knew it was the last time. I pushed him away, feeling something in my chest tear wide open as the cold air filled the space between us. Liam braced himself against the wall, trying to catch his breath. I fought the stupidest urge to sit down on the stairs and cry. He took a shaking breath.
Anna said.
She said that Nico's been working secretly on some kind of virus. She thinks it's for the Thurmond hit. It's the kind that someone will have to go in and install before any kind of attack can happen. His voice sounded hollow. Would you happen to know anything about that? I looked away.
Jesus, Ruby,
he said quietly. He was giving me the chance to come clean about the Thurmond hit, but nothing, least of all him, was going to prevent me from doing this. I didn't need his approval.
They will kill you,
he said, anger seeping into the words.
You know this.
They know what you are and what you can do. Are you going to sway the whole camp? Get them under your control the way Clancy did at East River? They aren't going to let you leave that camp alive. And you don't even care, do you?
He scrubbed at his face, letting out a sound of pure aggravation. Do I even need to ask who put this idea in your head? He's not one of us, Ruby. He's not. And you still side with him. You tell him the things you used to tell me. Tell me what happened. Tell me how to make this right between us again. I don't understand how we broke down. I don't understand why he has this hold on you.
I don't have to explain myself to you. I felt a cold drop of ice spread down my spine at my own words, no matter how true they were.
You used to want to, he said. Do you want to know why I didn't tell you about Alice and Amplify? I came close 100 times. I almost told you that night we were in the garage, but I stopped myself because lately it doesn't matter what I say. You and Cole think it's wrong, stupid, or naive. Damn it, I am sick to death of that word. I'm not stupid. I'm not blind either. I can keep us fed. I can fix every damn fixture that's falling off. I can make sure all of the cars run. I can find us the one real shot we have doing some lasting good in a world that's already too violent. But that's not enough. I don't even register, do I? Not to him. Not to you. Not anymore.
I said nothing. Felt nothing. Was nothing.
I'm trying to think of what comes after. How we'll move on with our lives when this is all over. It's what we talked about before. I don't want any of these kids to live their lives stained with pain and regret and blood. I don't want that for you either. We can do good work. We can make the whole damn world see that we're good kids in a shitty situation. Please. Ruby, please. Cole is going to walk you right over a cliff, and he's going to be holding your hand the entire time.
I held his gaze a moment longer, letting the words expand, filling the parts of me that were crumbling. Think of the girls, I thought. Cabin 27. Sam. All of those thousands of kids who'd been left behind as I got out. Ashley's face, the dead eyes staring up at me, the accusation I'd read in them. Where were you? Why didn't you come sooner?
If I've hurt you half as bad as you're hurting me, he said, his voice ragged, then God, just kill me. I can't stand this. Say something. Say something!
I could sacrifice this, the thing I wanted most, for them, and the trade would never balance out, not fully. I owed them more than my love. I owed each of those girls my life. They needed to know what I'd felt today as we pulled out of Oasis. We would find the cure if it was the last thing I did on this earth, and it would be waiting for them when they got out. They would know true freedom, not because they'd be able to shed their terrible abilities, the thing that marked them as freak, because they'd be able to make every choice that had been denied to them for years. They could go anywhere, be with the people they loved. In the end, it didn't matter what happened to me. I understood what Nico had meant now when he talked about making amends. I couldn't go back and change the things that had happened to them, but I could sure as hell put them in charge of their own futures. It would be worth it. Losing this, it would feel worth it. One day. But now, it only hurt. It felt like tearing myself into pieces. The end came with silence, and I knew Liam felt it, even if he was too stubborn to admit it to himself. There was nothing left to say. I turned and started back up the stairs.
"I'll be around," he called after me, "when you decide you want to find me."
Swallowing the painful lump in my throat, I kept my back to him and said, "Don't bother waiting." I was at the top of the stairs, pushing the door open, when he said,
"Maybe I won't."
The door swung shut behind me, clicking quietly back into place. I let my body seize up, the pain tearing through me as I went into the nearest bunk room and collapsed down onto one of the beds. I clenched my fists, released them, clenched and released, trying to work out the unbearable tightness to set some kind of rhythm for my breathing instead of the horrible, rough gasping. Laughing voices drifted down the hall from the big room, at odds with the screaming inside of my head. I don't know how it happened, only that my vision blurred. By the time it finally cleared, I was standing inside Alban's office with no memory of getting there. When I turned, there were two figures standing in the doorway, shoulder to shoulder, wearing mirrored expressions of concern. They seemed to communicate a whole conversation in a single look.
"So," Vida began, "what did we miss?"
17. "When did you get in?" The question bounced off the walls of the tunnel as Vida, Chubbs, and a newly arrived Cole and I all walked toward the bar. "Why didn't you let us know you were so close? You do actually have Lillian, right?"
"Oh, we have her,"
Chubbs said, his gaze drifting over to Vida.
"And an explanation for not calling."
She let out a huff, crossing her arms over her chest.
"It was an accident."
"Yes, well?"
He pushed his glasses up the bridge of his nose delicately.
"The burner phone we had accidentally fell out of the car, and someone accidentally backed over it, because someone was in a rush after she accidentally alerted some skip tracers we were nearby when she accidentally used her abilities to move a light pole out of the road after she had accidentally backed into it."
"Someone better shut their mouth before I accidentally slam my fist into their teeth."
She punched his shoulder, and it was almost playful.
"Shut his mouth? Fist into his teeth.
Really, a grammar lesson."
As we climbed the ladder, I let Cole explain what had happened during the Oasis hit. I felt too newly bruised to articulate what I needed to say, and, worse, the heaviness in my skull made me feel like I was trapped underwater. I couldn't look Chubbs in the eye, no matter what he did to slyly get my attention. Liam would tell him the whole story, and he would side with his friend, and I just couldn't. I couldn't with anything that didn't directly relate to Lillian Gray or Thurmond.
Vida led the four of us out of the bar's back room and into the main one. Everything had been boarded up, the useful things like plates and glasses brought down into the ranch. The shadows were so pervasive, I almost missed the small form cowering in the far back corner booth. She wore jeans that were clearly too big for her, and a button-down shirt that must have belonged to a man. All of her blonde hair was tucked up into a Braves baseball cap. She took in her surroundings with a lethal stillness, alert and assessing. The hardness in her eyes, her stance, they were all in her son, too. The sight was enough to halt my steps, turn my blood to ice. I'd always thought that Clancy physically resembled his father, but the details, the tapping of her finger against her crossed arms. She didn't say a word, but I heard her voice all the same, the echo of what I'd picked up in her son's mind. Clancy, my sweet Clancy. I sucked in a sharp breath.
They weren't keeping her inside of Kansas HQ, Vida said. She was in one of the smaller perimeter buildings. We only knew how to find her because we picked up on radio transmissions between the agents talking about the arrangements to trade her for the agents Gray's men picked up. They kept the agents alive specifically to get her back. So, you were wrong, asswipe, she informed Cole. And this better be damn well worth it, because I could have had Kate back and not Looney Tunes over there.
Cole nodded and stepped forward, approaching the woman with all the care and cautiousness afforded to a spooked animal.
Hi, Dr. Gray. You're safe here.
She either didn't understand or she didn't care, throwing his hand off her. She turned to bolt toward the door. The way she pounded her fists against the worn wood made my own hands ache.
Pale.
Out. Car. More. Now. Now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The words barely sounded like words. They were emphasized and accented strangely, the way someone would talk around a full mouth, or if their tongue was clamped between teeth. I turned back toward Vida, who only gave a tired sigh.
For someone who can't talk or understand for shit, she is a major pain in the ass.
She's talking, though. I was interrupted by her guttural cry as Cole lifted her up and tried to pin her arms to her side.
She doesn't understand anything. We tried writing, speaking slowly, different languages,
Chubb said, rubbing his chin.
If there's anything left inside of her head, she can't get it out.
There's a difference between broken and ruined. With one, you can hope to piece the object back together, but the other, there's just no coming back. I pressed my face against my hands, giving up on trying to meet Lillian Gray's dark eyes as they roved around the senior quarters we'd given her. She'd come into the ranch yesterday afternoon, terrified, and she'd spent the whole of the morning exactly that way, shaking like we'd dunked her into the Atlantic in the middle of January. It was a wonder she hadn't passed out from exhaustion yet. Inside her mind, I couldn't describe it. There was actually nothing to describe. The first time I'd slipped into her memories, I'd immediately yanked myself back out, dizzy enough that I almost threw up. It was so cluttered, bright flashes of images flashing in no order, speeding by in a quarter of a second, too quick for me to latch on to anything. The intensity of it all was like sitting in a car that jumped from 0 to 100. It threw me back against my seat, even as I wondered if she was doing it on purpose.
Dr. Gray,
I said sharply, trying to drag her attention back to me.
Can you tell me what your first name is?
Name-y,
she muttered, hands cupping the rim of the baseball cap.
Don't. Good.
Pale. Shade.
God, Senator Cruz said, covering her face with her hands.
How can the two of you stand it? This poor woman.
Cole pushed himself off of where he'd been leaning against the opposite wall.
I think that's enough for the day, Jim.
But I haven't made any progress.
Maybe there just isn't any progress to make,
Senator Cruz offered, a hand on my back. The former First Lady had been the only thing important enough to drag her out of the senior agent quarters she'd been given, away from Rosa. I almost wished she hadn't come, because it was bad enough feeling disappointed in myself. It was gutting to think I was disappointing her, after all she'd done for us. I haven't even been trying for 2 full days, I insisted. At least give me another afternoon. Lillian Gray repositioned herself so she was lying down on the small bed, her face turned into the pillow. I could feel the frustration pouring off her, and didn't try to catch her hand as she slammed it into the plastic-covered mattress over and over. I sighed, rubbing my forehead. All right, we'll take a break.
How much should we tell the others about her condition? Senator Cruz asked.
Vida and Chubbs had promised to be tight-lipped, to claim the woman was exhausted and needed rest, if pressed by any of the kids. It only bought me a little time to figure out how to help her. Being up front with the others wasn't an option that was in the cards for me. If they saw that Lillian Gray, their one shot at deciphering all the research and data we had about the cure, was like this, it wasn't going to do anything other than swing them more firmly to Liam's side. The side that seemed like it was actually doing something. From the moment we'd left Los Angeles, Cole and I had banked on having information about the cause and cure of IAAN to prove ourselves to the kids. But 3 weeks later, we had nothing to show that we'd delivered on our promises. Even the kids we'd pulled from Oasis spent more time in the garage than they did in the ranch proper. The only time I saw them was when they came to the kitchen to pick up their meals, and even then they brought their food back into the garage to eat.
I'm going to turn the door handle around so it locks from the outside, Cole said. If we tell the kids to leave her alone, they will.
If they ever bother leaving the garage. I'm worried about the agents. Kate, I said. What's the reaction going to be when they realize that the League doesn't have her to barter with anymore?
The League will keep up appearances as long as humanly possible, Cole assured me. And I told you what Harry said. He and a few others from his old Special Forces unit are going to investigate the reports of a black site prison near Tucson. Dusting off the Green Berets, apparently.
How Harry had managed to find out about a black site, which by its definition didn't exist in any formal records, was beyond me. I didn't want to press Cole on it in front of Senator Cruz.
That's promising, she said, giving me a faint smile.
I shook my head. It was barely anything at all. I removed Lillian's hat and dirty tennis shoes and tried to ease her under the blankets. Her face was gaunt as she looked up at me, but there were still traces of the rare beauty she had been. Her eyes narrowed, and suddenly I wasn't seeing her, but her son.
Alvin would want you here with us, Cole told the woman gently. You have friends here. Friends. Safe.
Alvin?
Lillian sat straight up, her legs tangling in the blankets I'd carefully arranged for her.
John!
Cole and I exchanged a sharp look, but just as quickly, she fell back into muttering nonsense beneath her breath.
Hap. The. Mo.
He moved to the small desk just to the right of the entrance, opening the drawer.
Dr. Gray, we have some things for you to look at after you get some rest. I'm just going to leave them here. They might be a little, difficult. There's a chart.
Charts.
He held them up so she could see, and the woman? The reaction was instant. She sat straight up and reached for them.
Cerebellum. Pineal body. Thalamus. Interventricular foramen.
The quality of her voice completely changed. It was sharp, almost aware. There was a refined edge to it, too, as if she molded each word on her tongue before she said it.
"Okay," Cole said, stretching the word out. "That was unexpected."
And then the woman turned over on her other side and promptly passed out. Cole started to move toward the door, but I stayed exactly where I was, staring at her prone form. I'm not sure what made me want to try. Only that I'd had enough of a chance to process what I'd seen in her head to suddenly be curious about it.
"What?"
Cole asked, sounding further and further away as I slipped into her mind. The touch was as gentle as I could manage, and instead of trying to navigate the gleaming scenes that popped up behind my eyelids, I let myself be taken along their flow. I saw textbooks stacked high on a desk, young people in clothing decades out of fashion, movies flickering on screens in the dark, test grades, a bouquet of white roses that matched the dress she wore, that I wore, a younger, handsome version of the president waiting for her at the end of a long aisle strung with ropes of flowers, hospitals, machines, playgrounds, baby clothes, a child with black hair sitting at a kitchen table, his back toward me. All of these small moments of memory were cohesive, flowing as smoothly as if I had been guiding them with my own hand. It shifted then, all of these glimpses into her life. Splotches of rainbow color exploded over the scenes, and I was falling backward through white mist, nothing above or below me. A dream. She was deep enough in sleep now to relax both her mind and her body. When I pulled back out of her mind and away from her bed, she didn't stir at all.
"What?" Cole asked. "What did you see?"
I saw a mind that worked, that had whole, cohesive memories, and I was more confused than ever. "I think," I began, rising up from my knees, "I need to talk to Chubbs." Either anticipating the need, or just by virtue of his own curiosity, Chubbs was in the computer room, sitting at one of the empty desks near the front of the room. Tall stacks of thick, intimidating books were piled around him like fortress walls. A few of the Greens had taken the laptops down into the garage to work on Liam's and Alice's projects, but Nico was still there, as he always was. He saw me before Chubbs did, and by the expression on his face, I knew I needed to talk to him first.
"Three things," he said. "First, it's done."
"What we talked about?" I asked him. He held up a plain black flash drive on a string around his neck.
"All I need is to find a smaller size, one I can use to modify and work into glasses frames."
"You're the best," I said, meaning it sincerely. Cole had been right. Nico was our man, and not just because he had something to prove. He flushed a bit, squirming at the praise, then lowered his voice drastically.
"The second thing? The other thing we talked about?"
"We've talked about a lot of things," I reminded him. Nico clicked around, bringing up the now familiar server log. "Someone sent something? Again?"
"An email, 2 days ago, the night before you left for Oasis. This IP is from one of the laptops, while it was still here, in this room," he continued. "It went to an address that's now been deleted."
"Maybe someone was making contact with Amplify?" I asked, not bothering to hide the bitterness in my voice. He shrugged.
"Again, the simplest explanation is usually the right one."
My eyes narrowed slightly. "But you don't believe that, do you?"
"It's just suspicious. Liam made it sound like they only interacted with Amplify in person, so I'm not sure who would be leaking files to them now, or why. This one only stuck out to me because it was a simple message. Do you think it could have been Cole?"
"I'll ask," I said.
"I don't know how he's been contacting his stepfather."
"This is a pretty secure way of doing it," Nico said approvingly. "And Liam and the others didn't hide any of their activity when they sent the media package out last night."
"They got it together that fast?" I asked flatly. "Did any of it take with the press?"
"Well, that's the third thing."
He clicked into a folder on the desktop, bringing up yet another new window.
"All of it is offline now. Gray's censors shut the major news sites down until they stripped the story, but the photos and video have been popping up on hundreds of message boards, as well as several of the flash sites that Amplify feeds out to the net. They throw up hundreds of versions of the exact same site with different domain names and search terms embedded in the coding, so that at least one of them will pop up depending on the keywords that people are inputting. I did screenshots of everything I could find, in case you wanted to see it."
He put up the screenshot of CNN's homepage as an example. The feature not only was on the main page, it took up half of it. Tiled photos of the exterior of the camp, the children with their faces blurred coming out of the bunks, our backs as we ran down the hallway in those last moments, heading for the door. The largest of the photos was of the wall, the dozens of red handprints that, if you were only scrolling by, could have been mistaken for blood. The headline under which everything fell was, "No Oasis, an inside look at a rehabilitation camp."
"They also showed this video,"
Nico said. The moment it loaded, from the very first frozen screen, I knew exactly what it would be of. I couldn't see my face. Alice had filmed it all from behind me, so that she would have a clear shot of the children coming out of the rooms. "My name is..." The audio recording beeped straight through my name. "I'm one of you. All of us here are like you, except the woman with the camera. We're getting you out of here, taking you to somewhere safe. But we have to move, fast. Fast as you can, without hurting yourselves or anyone around you. Follow them. Fast, 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 okay?" I gripped the edge of the desk hard enough that Nico leaned back as he said,
"I take it they didn't ask you before they used this footage?"
"They did not." And this, too, felt personal. It felt like they were throwing it back in my face. The rest of the video was shots spliced together out of order, the bound and gagged PSFs, a close-up of their uniforms, equipment with military decals, smart choices to try to lend it additional authenticity.
"From the comments I read on the different message boards, it sounds like at least two major papers picked up the story. By the time I tried streaming the TV news, though, there were already government people analyzing it, pointing things out that supposedly made it fake. Did you know they released a list of kids, too? Individual photographs of them and what their parents did for the Federal Coalition?"
"I didn't," I said, gritting my teeth. "Did Cole see this?"
"Yeah, he was in here watching with me earlier," Nico said. "Look, they're probably all down there patting themselves on the back for this, but the truth is, it didn't stick. Less than 20 minutes after it went up, Gray scrubbed the web. Not only that, but a number of web hosting companies were taken offline. The comments on the forums, look, like this one?"
He pointed to the timestamp.
"From early this morning when the news broke."
The post read, "This is sickening. Are they all like this?"
"And 2 hours later," Nico said, "the tone of the comments changed.
This has to be a hoax. It's too perfectly put together. I could do this in my backyard with a few actors." The post below it read, "Then how did they get images of the kids? Old stock images? Old movies? Have you never heard of Photoshop?"
"A lot of people don't think this is real," Nico said. "Part of the problem is that we don't have a name or identity as a group. We couldn't claim responsibility for this and then back it up with a history of other information dumps. Amplify is only known for boosting information that's already been released by third parties.
That's where their name comes from. And even they haven't had enough big breaks to seem wholly credible to the general population.
But people at least saw the images, I said. No matter how Nico spun it, that was a small victory. Because now, when others thought of the camps, these images were likely the first thing that would spring to mind.
This isn't going to bring Thurmond down,
Nico said, his dark eyes flashing.
I believe in our plan. It's the only option.
Thanks, Nico, I said, squeezing his shoulder. Keep me updated, okay? He nodded and turned back to his computer, fingers flying over the keyboard. I stood and made my way back over to Chubbs. He was partially angled in the direction of Nico's computer, wearing the expression of someone who'd been pretending not to listen, even as they heard everything.
I'm surprised you're not working in the garage, I told him, taking the empty seat next to him.
I have no idea what you mean by that,
Chubbs said, though it was clear that he now had the full picture, or at least Liam's half of what had happened.
I'm sure you don't, I said, but if that's where you want to be,
I can understand you picking Liam's side. Everyone else did.
Even Zoo. His hands came slapping down against the desk.
There is one side. That is the side of friendship and trust and love, and that is the side that everyone should be on. And I am refusing to acknowledge that any other side could exist. Do you understand?
I blinked.
Yes. Though, Chubbs said, I am inclined, being co-founder of Team Reality, to think the garage is being overly idealistic about how easily this will play out for them, as evidenced by your discussion with Nico.
What does Vida think? I asked.
Vi is down in the gym right now, he said, not in the garage. And she is, by her nature, inclined to the side that involves guns and explosions.
I nodded, then motioned toward the books, all of which, now that I was closer, seemed to be medical texts. Are you trying to figure out what's wrong with Dr. Gray?
Yes, he said. Did you make any progress on that front?
I met his weak smile with one of my own. It's the weirdest thing, I told him. When I tried to look into her mind while she was awake, everything was racing, really intense colors and sounds and images that moved so fast. But when I tried again when she was asleep, they were real memories, coherent, whole.
Were you able to stay in her mind for long? The first time, I mean.
No, it made me feel sick. He nodded, taking that in.
Maybe that was the point. That's the only way she knows how to keep oranges out.
That was my thought, too.
It makes sense. If you knew you had a son capable of coming in and making a mess of everything inside of your skull, wouldn't you try to teach yourself a few ways to block him out? Protect yourself?
Someone intelligent and determined enough to come up with a cure for this sickness would have taken every precaution against it.
So her memories are in there, and they're not damaged.
Chubbs trailed off, running his finger down the side of one of the open textbooks. Where did you get these? I asked, picking up the nearest brick-like book.
A bookstore, he said,
then added quickly, after hours.
Vida took them for me since I was too chicken shit to get out of the car.
I'm glad you stopped, I said, flipping through its pages. Most of them were on anatomy, but several, including the one he was looking through now, were neuro this and neuro that, all with pictures of the human mind on the cover. He looked up, an unreadable expression on his face.
Clancy can break into a person's mind, right? What can he do once he's inside?
I thought about it. Influence their feelings, keep them frozen so they can't move, and project images into their head so they're seeing something that's not there. Another voice chimed in.
He can also,
Chubbs and I pivoted toward Nico, who looked like he wanted nothing more than to dive back behind the wide computer monitor.
It's not just that he can make them freeze up. He can move people around, like they're toys. I saw him do it to the researchers at Thurmond a few times. He'd jump into their minds mid-conversation to listen to what others were saying. It was really hard for him to keep up. The last time he tried it, he slept a full day to recover. He would get terrible migraines, so he had to stop.
Chubbs gave me a look I read perfectly. Migraines, not human decency.
Can he affect someone's memories? Chubbs asked. Can he erase them? Actually, I don't think you're erasing them so much as suppressing them, but can he manipulate someone's memories?
He can see someone's memories. I caught myself, half stunned by the realization that slammed into me. He only ever saw my memories when I let him in. I don't think he could do it on his own. The real reason he tried teaching me control at East River was because he wanted to figure out how I was doing it.
That other orange kid you knew, what could he do?
Martin. My skin crawled at the thought of him. He manipulated people's feelings. Chubbs looked intrigued, flipping back through the book to a diagram of each section of the brain.
That's fascinating.
You're all using different parts of a person's mind against them.
Sorry, that came out the wrong way.
I held up a hand. It's fine.
This is complicated to explain, but even though the mind has many different structures within it, they all work together in different ways. So it's not really that you're accessing different sections of the brain, but different systems within it. Like the frontal lobe plays a part in making and retaining memories, but so does the medial temporal lobe. Does that make sense?
Sort of. So, you think I'm somehow interrupting different parts of that process, depending on what I'm doing?
Right, he said. My understanding is that memory is many different systems, all of which function in slightly different ways. Creation, for instance, or bringing one to mind, even storing.
He picked up the book in front of him.
The memory of what this object is, how to lift it, how to read the pages, how I feel about it, all different systems. My best guess is that when you remove someone's memories, you're not removing them at all, just disrupting a few of these key systems and rerouting the real memories to imagined ones. Or disrupting the encoding process before the memory can take shape and the neurotransmitters work, so the person can't...
Okay. But how do you jump between different systems, control other functions?
I don't know, Chubbs said. How did you do it to Clancy?
That brought me up short.
You froze him the same way he froze Liam and Vi. What did you do differently?
It was... the intent, I guess. I went completely still and wanted him to do the same. The words choked off. Mirror minds. That's what he had told me when I couldn't figure out how to get back out of the darkness there, sever the thread between us. Once I brought up a memory, my grip on his mind shifted back to his memories. When I went still and wanted him to do the same, he did. I explained the theory to Chubbs, who nodded.
It sort of makes sense. When you intentionally go into a person's memories, you're using the memory of how to do it rather than a memory itself. Wow, that sounded less confusing inside my head. Anyway, it involves being vulnerable to the other person having access to your memories. Some sort of natural empathy on your end. I can't imagine him being willing to run the risk of releasing any part of the control he has over his mind, or that he possesses a shred of empathy. Do you want to experiment with this? Maybe we can see if you can get me to move my hand.
No, I said, horrified.
I just want to know what system or part of her mind he affected to leave her like this. Chubb sat back, his excitement still there, verging on gleeful.
It's going to take me a little time to find the answer. I'll have to go through all of these books.
Hey, losers!
Vida said from the doorway, still flushed and dripping with sweat from her workout.
I think you're going to want to see what they're working on in the garage.
18. It took me a moment to even understand what I was seeing as we approached. Duct tape held up two white sheets as a backdrop behind Zoo, who was perched on a folding chair. She glowed under the flood of light from four desk lamps that had all been turned and angled toward her. They'd set up a poor man's version of a studio in the corner of the room. There were two other chairs. The one facing her, next to the camera, was for Alice, who was fiddling with the device. The other was for Liam, who sat to Zoo's right, talking to her quietly. He was the one that spotted us first, and scowled.
"What's going on?" Chubbs asked, trying to take in the scene.
"Suzume's agreed to do an interview with us,"
Alice said, craning her neck around to look at us. She was still dressed in all black, but her hair was twisted now into a messy bun. Next to her were two different notebooks, each open to a page full of scribbles and blue ink. She had a third in her lap.
"Cole said you only get one shot to prove this would work."
I almost said it, but it felt petty. After only a few hours, there was no real way to measure the full impact of the first media package they'd already released.
"Is there a problem?"
Liam asked. Vida let out a whistle, as if already predicting how this situation was going to play out. But contrary to what Liam apparently thought, I wasn't here to pick a fight. "Zoo," I said, "can I talk to you just for a second?" She nodded immediately, and I felt tension release its hold on my stomach. I led her a little way away from the others.
"Are you okay doing this?"
I asked. She gave me a bright nod and held up her fingers in an okay sign.
"And you understand that if you do this, your face will be all over the place. They explained that, right?"
I didn't want her to think I was treating her like a kid incapable of making her own decisions, and I didn't want to imply that Liam would ever purposefully trick her, but I needed the confirmation from her. My first instinct with the others, no matter what, would always be to act like a shield, positioning myself between them and the prying eyes of the world. And Zoo, being Zoo, seemed to understand. She slid the small, narrow notebook out of her pocket and wrote,
"I can't fight, right? Not at Oasis? Not at Thurmond?"
When I shook my head, she didn't seem upset by it, just resigned.
"This is the only way I can think of to do something. I want to help."
"I hope you don't think I haven't noticed or appreciated all that you've done here at the ranch so far," I said. Zoo kept writing.
"What happened yesterday made me realize it's important to speak up and say your piece, what you believe in."
"Liam has that effect on people," I said quietly. She took my arm and moved her thumb from the corner of the page so I could see what else she had written.
"I want to be strong, like you. I want to do this to help you get what you want. I'm tired of being scared. I don't want them to win." The words stole the pain in my heart away, just for a little while. I managed to smile at her and hugged her tight enough that she let out a silent, shuddering laugh.
"Okay," I said. "Liam's talking for you?"
She nodded.
"I told him he could, as long as he wasn't in the shot. He said it was okay, but I don't want anyone to go looking for his family because of this."
"What about your family?"
"My family is here."
I bit my lip. "You're right. We are. And for what it's worth, I think you're going to knock 'em dead." Zoo scribbled something down in her notebook and held it up for me to see.
"I will. I've been practicing."
Will you stay and watch?
Of course.
Chubbs and Vida were still standing where I'd left them, talking quietly to each other, their backs turned to Liam. They stepped away from each other as I came closer, and the quiet conversation between Liam and Alice ended the moment Zoo sat back down. I felt Liam's eyes flick to me, just for a moment, but I kept my own eyes on Zoo, gave her an encouraging little smile when she glanced over one last time.
Ready? Liam asked.
I have paper and a pen for her to write with, Alice said, picking up one of the bigger notebooks from the floor and holding it out to her. She can tell me to stop at any point, and I will. She and I shook on it.
I know. Go ahead.
Liam's jaw worked back and forth, but he said nothing. Alice waited only a moment for me to lodge another protest before she turned. From where I stood behind her, I could watch as she switched her camera over from still photos to video. Zoo couldn't fix her eyes on the camera lens for long, not without a look of wariness. I watched as she adjusted her plain white shirt and jeans, folded and unfolded her hands in her lap, crossed and uncrossed her ankles.
Okay, sweetheart. Make sure you write nice and big so Liam can easily read it. If you don't want to answer anything, just shake your head. Okay?
Great. Let's start off with two easy ones. Can you tell me your name and age, please? Zoo scribbled the words down, looking relieved to finally not have to stare at the camera. I thought that was the only reason she bothered writing, even though Liam clearly knew the answer to both of the questions.
My name is Suzume, he said, and I'm 13 years old.
Suzume? That's a lovely name.
Thank you, Liam read. My friends call me Zoo.
Can you tell us a little bit about why your friend is speaking for you? Zoo looked away from the camera, over to where we were standing. I saw the small movement in the corner of my eye, the way Vida gave her a low, quick thumbs up. I've been practicing.
Because... For a long time, I was too scared to say anything,
Zoo said.
And I didn't think anyone would listen.
Liam jumped as if she'd shot him in the chest, his face pale with shock. The world ceased to spin under my feet for that first second when her sweet, high voice emerged. It was slightly halting, edged with the nerves she wasn't letting anyone see on her face. So different, too, from the way it sounded when she had talked in her sleep, not scratchy with disuse.
I did it,
she said, almost in wonder.
Yeah, you did! Get it, girl!
Vida said, and her loud clapping was the only sound that emerged in the silence that followed. The kids who'd been watching the interview happen from where they sat fanned out on the floor to the side looked, in a word, stunned. Chubbs moved quickly, shoving past me, Vida, and Alice, who'd started to rise to her feet to reset the camera, and all but slammed into Zoo. His face as he hugged her was a portrait of pure joy, and he didn't bother trying to hide the evidence of the tears that were beginning to track down his face.
I'm trying to do an interview,
Zoo complained, her voice muffled by his shirt. After a moment, she relented, patting his back.
Okay, Charlie, Vida said. Let the girl finish before you try to drown her in tears. Come on.
She carefully extracted him from the interview space, guiding him back around to where I stood, where the rest of his embrace was transferred to me. And I was more than a little glad for the excuse to look away from Zoo to deal with the tears that were starting to well up behind my own lashes.
Why is everyone acting like crazy people?
She said, and already her voice was getting steadier, stronger.
Can we start again?
Liam stood up, about to drag his chair away, when she grabbed his hand and said something quietly to him. I couldn't see his expression at first, not with his back to us, but I caught a glimpse of it as he pulled his chair over to the other side of the camera, and my throat ached with the pride there, the happiness. He sat back down, and Zoo immediately reoriented herself so she was angled toward him instead of the reporter. Her whole posture changed, relaxing enough for her to start swinging her legs back and forth.
"This okay?" Liam asked, both to her and Alice.
The reporter nodded, merely crossing the next two questions off her list. Her next questions were about Zoo's color classification and what she could do. It led naturally into a bigger question.
Were you sent to a camp by your parents, or were you picked up?
I made my father's car. I killed its engine by mistake. It was an accident. Up until then, I had only ruined a few lamps. My alarm clock. They were talking about terrorists, I think. They were saying that they thought IAAN was because of terrorists and that they should leave as soon as possible to go back to Japan. I got upset and I didn't have a good control. I fried the engine and cars hit us. My mom's pelvis was broken. After she got out of the hospital, she insisted I go back to school that next Monday. It was the first collection.
The collections were a series of pickups kept secret from children. If parents felt threatened by their children or thought they were a danger to themselves or to others, they sent them to school on specific days, and the PSFs picked them up.
You mentioned you can control your abilities now. How did you learn to?
Zoo shrugged.
Practice? Not being afraid of them?
What would you say to people who feel that letting Psy kids learn to control their abilities endangers others? She made her patented, "Are you kidding me?" face.
Most kids only want to control them so they can feel normal. Why would I want to fry every light switch or phone I touch, every computer? There are kids who abuse it, maybe, but most of us, we're more dangerous if we can't control it, and everyone can learn if you give them time.
How did you feel when you realized you were being picked up by the Psy Special Forces at school that day? Alice asked.
I thought it was a mistake, she said, looking down at her hands. Then I felt stupid and small, like trash.
The reporter's questions had clearly been designed to bleed Zoo's old wounds for every last terrible detail. A question about her daily routine at Caledonia turned into how the PSFs treated them on an average day, and then on days they misbehaved. It was excruciating to try to imagine it happening to her. Beyond that, to hear Alice ask,
"You mentioned before that you only got out of Caledonia because you escaped. Can you talk about what happened?"
Zoo turned, leaning slightly so she was looking at Liam. He'd been watching with his arms crossed over his chest, struggling to keep the emotion off his face. Now he gave her a small nod, this heartbreaking little smile. "Go ahead."
"It was planned for months by my friend. He wasn't my friend then, but he was so nice to everyone, so smart. We knew we would only have one chance to get out, and he was it."
She moved into the finer details of the escape, how they had communicated the details to each other leading up to that night.
"Then it was happening. It was working. It snowed the day before, and there were piles of it everywhere. It made it hard to run, but we could see that some of the older kids were already in the booth, the guard box at the electric fence's gate. They were trying to disable it, get the gate to open. I don't know what was wrong. The camp controllers must have somehow blocked them. Then we just got..."
Alice let her have a few moments to collect her thoughts before pressing, "You got what? How did the PSFs and camp controllers respond? Zoo couldn't bring herself to say it. I remembered the scene so vividly, and I had only seen it secondhand in her memory. To have actually experienced it? I snuck a glance at Liam. He hadn't moved from his rigid pose, but his skin had taken on an ashen quality. Finally, Zoo lifted her hand, made a gun using her fingers, and fired in the direction of the camera. Alice actually flinched. "Why is that surprising?" I wondered. "Why would they feel any shame in mowing us down? How had they never even considered that possibility when they'd turned their kids over to a branch of the military?" "Are you saying they opened fire on the escaping kids? Are you certain they were using real rounds of ammunition?" She said in a flat voice, "The snow turned red." Alice stared at her notebook in her lap, as if unsure of where to go next with this. "I don't think people see us as human," Zoo said. "Otherwise, I don't know how they can do the things they did. You could always see that the PSFs were a little afraid, but also very angry, too. They hated having to be there. They called us all different names. Animals, freaks, nightmares, bad words I'm not supposed to say. That's how they could do it. If we weren't human in their minds, they could treat us that way and not feel bad about it. That night we were like animals in a pen. Most of them shot at us from the windows of the camp's building. They'd wait until one of the kids got real close to the gate, and then..." I didn't realize she'd attracted a crowd until I heard someone let out a faint gasp and found the remaining kids and Cole standing a short distance behind us. Most were focused on Zoo's pale face as she explained this, but Cole was watching his brother.
"How did you escape that same fate?"
Alice sounded genuinely invested, engaged. "My friend, the one who'd planned it, they got the gate open. He came and picked me up and carried me out. I fell and couldn't force myself to get up and run. He carried me for hours. We found a car, this old minivan, and just drove for days to get away. We've been looking for safe places ever since."
"How did you survive out on the road? How did you find food and shelter?"
I don't want to say," Zoo said. When Alice sat up in surprise, she added, "Because there are so many kids who are still out there searching for those things, and I don't want to tell people where to look for them or how to wait for them to show up. There were a lot of ways to do it. You just had to learn how to stay invisible, not take bad, big risks."
"By people looking for them, are you talking about skip tracers?" Alice asked. "I looked up your listing in their network. The reward for recovering you and returning you to PSF custody is $30,000. Did you know that?" Zoo nodded. "Does that make you angry, knowing that someone is profiting off you that way?"
She took a long time for what should have been a very easy answer. "Yes, I'm angry. It makes me furious." "I don't know," she said finally. "Sometimes, yes, it makes me very upset. The price isn't a reflection of how much my life is worth. How could you calculate that? They take a flat amount, $10,000. And they increase it based on your abilities and how much potential they think you have to fight back. I think I'm okay with that price because it shows them I won't give up and just go with them. It says I'm going to fight to protect myself." The screen on the back of the camera showed Alice zooming in for a tighter shot of Zoo's face as the girl continued.
There are some men and women out there who live for it now. Not because they need the money, but because they like it, or they think they're good at it. It's messed up. They act like it's hunting season. But I think more of them have been forced into it. They need the money to survive. The PSFs have to do it because of the draft. I think if they stopped long enough to think about it, they would see that they're not really angry with us for what happened. Maybe they're afraid, but they're angry at the people who didn't protect them. The government. The president. They have no power to remove those things from their lives, so they transfer the blame. They act like IAAN was our fault, not something that happened to us. So the economy crashing? Us. Losing their houses? Us. Alice started to ask another question, but Zoo wasn't quite finished yet. I knew someone like that. He was a good person. Great person. The best. The thing is, if you want to be a skip tracer, you have to prove it. You can't get into their system or get any of their tech until you turn your first kid in, Zoo explained in an avalanche of words. She twisted the notebook in her hands. I was driving to California with a group of kids, and we were being chased by these two skip tracers. Real ones. The hungry ones I was talking about. They made our car flip and crash so bad that one of my friends, he died. They were going to take me, but another skip tracer came in and got me out of the car instead. I was trapped by the seatbelt. I should have said that before. I couldn't get out and run like the others. Liam swore loudly. I was too numb by the account to do anything other than listen. Was he one of the ones you mentioned before? He needed to turn one kid in to start? Can you tell us about him? Zoo nodded. He was old. Not old, but definitely in his 20s. Maybe 27? Alice gave a faint laugh. 27's not so old. She shrugged before continuing. We were in Arizona. I think he must have been from Flagstaff or Prescott. I'm not sure. He was really angry. Something really sad happened to him. I could tell, but he didn't talk about it. He was someone who just wanted to get out of his life, but he couldn't do it without money. No matter how many times he told me he was going to turn me in, I knew he wouldn't.
How could you tell? Alice asked.
Yes, I thought. How on earth could you have trusted this person?
I told you, he was a good person. He was really struggling. It ate him up inside. No matter how many times he tried to treat me like I was a freak, he always gave in. There were two chances to turn me over to the PSFs, but he couldn't do it. Not only did he save me, but he helped save another kid and got him back to the people who were caring for him. He was the one who got me to California.
The pieces of this were coming together for me now. Those people she was talking about were Liam's parents. That must have been the moment that she crossed paths with Liam's mom.
What happened to him?
His name was Gabe. Did I say that? His name was Gabe, and he was really kind.
What happened to him? Alice asked again.
Gabe died.
Chubbs released the breath he'd been holding and scrubbed his face with his hands. I'd known how the story ended, but it was still devastating. Seeing her face, hearing those two words.
What happened to him?
Softer this time, more hesitant. Alice looked back at Liam as if to ask if it was all right to continue to head down this path. He nodded. He understood, too. She wanted to talk about this. I had a feeling she agreed to this specifically so she could talk about Gabe and what he'd done for her.
The kids I was traveling with before, they beat us to California and were waiting at the meet spot we agreed on. We didn't know that, though.
Oh, God.
Gabe made me walk behind him as we looked around. It was really, really dark. We could barely see anything. When we opened the doors to one of the nearby buildings, the other kids were hiding in there. They saw him and recognized him from Arizona, and they thought he had followed them. One of the girls panicked and shot him. I looked at Liam the exact moment he looked at me, absolutely stricken. He was a good person, and he was just trying to help. It was a mistake, but there was nothing we could do. They thought he was going to hurt them. They didn't know what I did. He died because he helped me instead of helping himself.
That's terrible, Alice said, still looking for the right words.
Everyone is so afraid of each other, Zoo continued. I don't want to look at a grown-up and assume they're thinking of how much they can get for me. I don't want them to look at me and think of how badly I could hurt them. Too many of my friends are in pain. They've been hurt very badly by what they've been through, but they've taken care of me. That's the other side of everything. Because there are people who are afraid, and then there are people who are so brave. We only survived being hungry and scared and hurt because we had each other.
Alice let the camera keep recording for several more seconds before finally switching it off and sitting back.
I think that'll do for today.
Zoo nodded, standing up and setting the notebook down on her chair, and came straight toward Vida.
Did I do okay?
Vida held out her fist for a bump.
You killed it, girl!
Liam was half listening to whatever Alice was saying to him, half listening to hear what was passing between Zoo and Vida. He caught me watching him, and instead of looking away, he offered up a small smile. I felt myself return it, but the moment passed as quickly as it had arrived. What was important here was Zoo. The small blip of happiness I'd felt at that small ceasefire was nothing compared to the joy soaring inside of me as she talked to Vida, her hands moving to emphasize her words. And as I listened to the sweet way the pitch of it rose as she got excited, a thought began to stir at the back of my mind. I touched Chubbs's arm to get his attention. What part of the mind controls speech? He came out of his daze like I'd thrown a pitcher of ice water in his face.
It's a whole system, remember?
Right, I understand that. I guess my question is there something in your mind that could leave you silent or unable to process words, even if everything else seemed to be working fine? Now he just looked confused.
Zoo didn't talk by choice.
I meant Lillian, I said. Like, all of the lights are on in the house, but she can't get the door unlocked. She can pick up a few words here and there, but she can't understand us, and we can't understand her. Have you heard of anything like that? He thought about it.
I can't think of the medical term, but it's been known to happen sometimes with stroke patients. My dad had someone come into his ER once who'd been in the middle of teaching a lesson on Shakespeare, and then, 2 minutes after stroking out, couldn't communicate at all. It's expressive aphasia, or is it receptive aphasia? I'm not sure. I need to double check. One indicates damage in the Wernicke's area of the brain.
Inglés, por favor,
Vida said, catching the tail end of this. Unfortunately, you're the only one here fluent in geek. He snorted.
Basically, we form what we want to say in the Wernicke's area of the brain, and then that planned speech is transferred to the Broca's area, which actually carries out the speech. I wonder...
What? I prompted.
Maybe Clancy managed to shut down or somehow numb those parts of her mind. Or depressed them, maybe, so they're not functioning at full capacity.
He turned a shrewd look on me.
When you restored Liam's memories, what exactly did you do?
I was thinking about... I was remembering something that happened between us, I said. I was... kissing him. Reaching out to him somehow. It was kind of instinctive. I was trying to connect to something in him. I was trying to find the old Liam I had given up.
Mirror minds.
Oh, I said, pressing both hands to my mouth.
Oh!
Share with the rest of us, Vida said, hands on Zoo's shoulders. Your half is the only half of the conversation I understand.
I need to jumpstart her, I said.
Excuse me, Cole said, joining the conversation now. Who are we giving the shock treatment to?
You think you can reset that system in her mind, Chubb said, understanding.
But how exactly?
Clancy said something to me the last time I was in his head, I said.
Mirror minds.
I think that's what happens when I enter someone's head. I'm mirroring what's in their mind with my own. When I'm tampering with memories and searching through them, it's like I've set up a mirror between us, and all of those changes I'm imagining into existence are immediately reflected in the other mind.
Okay,
Cole said. This was going to be nearly impossible to explain. They had no idea what any of this felt like, and I wasn't sure I knew how to articulate it.
Thank God for Chubbs, though.
So you think that if you engage that part of your mind, it'll engage that part of her mind, too, and reset it?
I held up my hands.
Worth a try?
More than worth a try, Cole said. It's time we checked in on her anyway.
There was a bang on the loading dock door, one loud sound that came like a shot through the calm that had settled over the room. Liam jumped to his feet, a grin splitting his face as he jogged to the door. It was the only reason I let myself relax as he and Kylie unhooked the padlock they'd installed there, and the door rolled up, rattling like thunder as sunlight spilled in. I counted off the 8 kids as they came in, each somehow looking worse than the next, filthy in a variety of mismatched knits. We could smell them from where we were standing, which Cole chose to note with raised brows and an expression I'd seen Liam wear a dozen times. I recognized the new faces, but I hadn't been in Knox's camp in Nashville long enough to assign them names from memory. The kids there had been so hopeless, left with next to nothing by way of supplies, because Knox and a few of the others had taken everything they brought in for themselves. Now this group only seemed to be in slightly better shape. Between them, they had a few backpacks and makeshift bags tied together from old sheets. If I hadn't known any better, I'd have thought they walked from Nashville. Liam had reached up to start pulling the door down, but stopped, leaning out to wave the last two in. One, a tall blonde girl, stopped to clasp a hand on his shoulder. The other, an even taller guy wearing a bright red checked hunting hat, dropped his backpack and stretched. Olivia, I thought. Brett.
And sure enough, Kylie and Lucy rushed forward with a cry of, Liv! The girl turned toward them, and the other two were brought up short, actually skidding against the cement at the full sight of her face. One side of it had been burned by Mason, the red that Knox had kept prisoner in his camp, and had scarred badly as it healed.
Got a makeover, she said in a light voice. As you can see. Hi, Ruby.
Brett was there in an instant, running a hand down her long braid to rest against her lower back. I crossed the last few feet between us. Despite the fact that neither of us were particularly warm, cuddly people, I hugged her like it had been years, not a month, since we'd parted ways.
It's good to see you, I said.
It really was.
You too, Brett.
Feelings mutual, he assured me.
I stepped back, letting Kylie, Lucy, and Mike approach her, hug her, bring her more firmly into the fold.
So, this is Lodi, huh? This is it,
Liam confirmed.
We've been busy. Did you catch the news today? We did the camp hit I mentioned to you before.
You did it? Olivia said, blinking. I remember you mentioning it, but... She exchanged a confused look with Brett.
It was all over the radio as we were coming in, Brett said. You guys do know that the Children's League is taking credit for it, right?
And just like that, the wind went completely out of Liam's sails. In fact, the air itself seemed to have been sucked completely out of the garage. It was Cole who walked over to the workstation, sending the kid standing there scattering as he switched on the radio. We'd caught the male radio host mid-sentence.
We've just received the following statement made by representatives of the Children's League.
I looked down at my boots, hands on my hips. Senator Cruz and Rosa came rushing in from the tunnel, Nico right behind them. The woman's face was pale as she opened her mouth to call out to us. The grave voice coming through the speaker prompted her news.
Early yesterday morning, we carried out an assault on one of Gray's rehabilitation camps located in Oasis, Nevada. We have taken the victims of his cruelty, the children interned there, and will release them only following the president's immediate resignation. Should these demands not be met, we will strike our next target.
Powerful words. If you're just tuning in, we have a breaking news update about the images and video released this morning by several noted papers.
They can't do this! Zach shouted over the chatter buzzing around us. They had nothing to do with it! They're making us look like terrorists!
Is this real? Senator Cruz asked Cole. Would they claim responsibility for it? Or is Gray trying to pin it on them to justify another attack on them? I think they're claiming credit, I said, feeling a need to inject a calm voice into the panicking fray. Gray doesn't need another excuse to attack them, and he's been scrambling to float the theory that everything was doctored. I guess it doesn't matter, though. The League has the target on their backs now, not us. Cole managed to wrangle his smug look